Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
So, Eric, we will get to the main event segment and the Danielson-Garcia match and Moxley-Danielson and all that fun stuff, but tonight, I thought it was a night of promos, like standout promos, and three of them come to mind. We got the Adam Page one sitting on a chair in the middle of the ring, kind of like a babyface champion promo. You got the one from MJF going against CM Punk, and then you've got the Eddie Kingston and Chris Jericho back and forth promo in the middle of the ring. So three kind of strong mic performances for the night. Out of those three, Eric, and we'll start with whatever one you say, which resonated most with you?
Well, I think the best one was clearly MJF. I don't know what to make of it. I assume it's a big swerve, but holy hell, was that an intense promo and went in a direction I don't think anybody saw coming.
Yeah, I'm with you. I agree. I think that was, just some really great work. Top to bottom, like regardless of what the, well, let's analyze it two ways. One, just for what the promo was itself. And MJF was emotional. He was serious at the same time. I thought the way he kind of connected the dots between all the balls that he was juggling was effective. It still, very much made you want to see the match. And in a lot of ways, Eric, it was exactly what you want out of a promo, and then layer on top of it that you just don't know exactly where it's going. I'm with you. I think it's a swerve, and there'll be even more heat on MJF than usual because of it. And the reason that's effective is because of how he executed it out there. Like, it was somewhat believable, and then you had Punk out there kind of, I don't want to say like dropping the character, but out there kind of like putting the feud and the grudge aside and just asking him, hey, like, is that true? And being very concerned. And so I think they take this down a road of like, MJF is in Punk's head a bit and trying to tell him these stories about his past so that maybe Punk doesn't want to be as aggressive or vicious during the dog collar match. So I think in the end, it's all, self-serving for MJF, but this wove a lot together, and it did so in a way that was just top notch and entertaining.
Yeah, I think it was, my notes say this was sort of MJF's supervillain origin story, right? It was his version of the Joker movie, right? We see how he became who he became. My initial gut reaction was I would have saved this high school football experience and the anti-Semitism he experienced for his inevitable face turn, right? Like years down the road. Since I think MJF's near-term future is definitely as a heel, and my guess is what I assumed was going to happen was Punk comes out without his music, says the comment to MJF without the microphone. So they're trying to have this sort of this is a shoot type thing without being so overbearing like Jericho was tonight. it was the sort of shoot elements well done. And then but what usually happens in wrestling is MJF does this, Punk comes out and it's a trap, and then the heels beat the heck out of Punk, the face, ahead of the pay-per-view match to build the heat. But they didn't do that. They didn't give you that last part tonight. They're making you wait for it to see where it goes. But, assume in the end, MJF probably is being built up for a world title shot, and probably they're going to put the belt on him possibly as soon as Double or Nothing. So just weird and unique and interesting, and it has the hook of me wanting to know what the next step is, which is really weird considering I was there in Chicago on Thanksgiving Eve when they started all this with their, you know, dueling promo in the ring that lasted forever. And it's still going, and we're spring is about to be here.
Yeah, well, it's still going. And I didn't know if they would be able to extend it out this long, or if they did, that it'd be as kind of intriguing as it is and still have like some juice left in the tank. And man, yeah, they've really gone through a lot to get here. I think it's really the best thing going, you know, on AEW television right now in terms of a well-booked story and a logical story and one that's entertaining and then one that should pay off nicely. As far as like the actual match itself goes, you know, with this, Eric, tonight, again, I'm with you, and I kind of think instead of like just getting that payoff of the MJF turn, or not turn, but kind of just going back on those words right away, I think we're going to see it, you know, likely next week, because there's heat in that now. I mean, the smarmy MJF character, like, It's so him to kind of have this moment and then like completely just lose all good faith because it's not genuine in the end. And I think, again, that's exasperated and more pronounced because of just how effective MJF was with that promo. So I think the end game is still the same there, but it's just, they're going to let it linger for a little bit longer. Did the promo tonight give you any sort of indication of which way the match is going to go or how this thing might wrap up at Revolution?
Payoff to this, they got to do it next week. Next week is the go home show, or at least the go home Dynamite. Anyway, yeah, they'll still have Rampage, but you know, they tend to not overbook that last Rampage before the pay-per-views because they have everything settled. Boy, you know, I assume that Punk wins the dog collar match. But if you're going to set up MJF to get the title shot in May, you wouldn't want to do that, would you? I mean, you'd want to put MJF over so he's strong heading into a title match. So I don't know. I like that I don't know which way the booking is going to go. That's a good thing, I think, in this case.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely agree with that. And then what did you think of CM Punk tonight? I mean, I mean, obviously the star of that segment was MJF because he did all the work, but Punk walking out there, and I thought he was good in articulating without really saying much the concern and kind of like the bewilderment of like, wow, like did that really have that much of an effect on you? Like, really, are you being serious? And I thought he sold that brilliantly with just how he walked to the ring. The no music I thought was a nice touch, even though, you know, you're there going for this kind of work shoot thing. But in that instance, I think it played well, because it's like you can envision him kind of in the back listening to this and just going, oh, forget it, I got to get out there. No pomp and circumstance, no big entrance, not going to play to the fans. You're just going to go out there and figure out just what the heck's going on. So I thought that was well done too, and Punk held up his end of the deal in selling for MJF and what he said.
Yeah, I agree with what you just said. And then the maybe the reason they didn't it wasn't a trap tonight was because Punk would look like the dumbest babyface on God's green earth if he came out and then it was just a setup to do an attack, right? That's what you would expect in wrestling. Dumb babyface comes out, takes the bait, gets his ass kicked, and they didn't do that. They might do it next week. Seems like they got to, you know, Punk's had MJF on his heels the last 2 weeks. Last week it was when he announced it was a dog collar match, and MJF literally was stunned into silence and didn't say a word and just walked to the back. And then obviously now this week was meant to follow up on that, and MJF is so freaked out about this dog collar match, he went out and told his origin story and how Punk played such a pivotal role in it, and tried to connect a lot of dots. I mean, I ultimately assume MJF is going to, you know, is going to pay this off by saying, ha ha, you marks all fell for it, right? Or, you know, you suckers or you fans, you're all idiots, right? You assume that's where it's going. But, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. All right, well, we got a lot more to get to. I definitely want to talk Jericho and Eddie Kingston. I want to talk about the main event stuff with Danielson, Moxley, and Garcia. We got a tag team situation to discuss as well. So we'll get there, but let's pause, set the table for the show, and then we'll open up the phone lines too. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show covering the February 23rd, 2022 edition of AEW Dynamite. I'm PW Torch's assistant editor, Zach Haydorn, filling in for Wade. And as always, Wade will be on the VIP side of things later on tonight, running down the entire show with analysis. You can go VIP by going to pwtorch.com/govip. It gives you a nice rundown of everything that comes with VIP membership, including ad-free version of pwtorch.com, all the archives of the past 30-plus years of Torch newsletters, and just an incredible array of podcasts that will keep you busy and engaged. So go there, give it a shot, pwtorch.com/govip. The other voice you hear tonight is that of former PW Torch columnist Eric Kroll. Eric, pleasure, man. Pleasure to talk with you, and always fun talking AEW.
With you as well, Zach. We are both from Chicago, so if you get tired of the Midwest accent, that's us.
Yeah, you're right. It's not going to let up on this show too much. No, yeah, and yeah, Eric, you know, both of us got a little taste of spring last week, but it's back to being bitter cold out there today.
It was the spring of deception.
Yes. And that, you know, God, I don't want to get too much into Chicago stuff here, but, like, that happens right about now, where it's like you get those little teases, 1, 2, 3 days, where you think, okay, maybe we're turning the corner here, and spring's on the horizon, and then you just get, you know, punched in the face with negative 10 degrees and snow.
It's a false finish.
Yes. Well said. All right, we'll open up the phone lines here. 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. Press 1. If you're in there, raise your hand. Let me know that you want to get on, and I'll make sure to try to get to as many callers as we can. We're hoping to have an on-site correspondent a little later. He's staying for the Rampage taping, but we're hoping to connect with him at some point during the show to give us kind of a on-site perspective of the reactions and just kind of what happened in the building tonight. You can also email us if you want to be a part of the show, but don't want to call, WadeKellerPodcast@gmail.com. That's WadeKellerPodcast@gmail.com. Looking at the mailbag here, we already have some really interesting questions to get to, and we'll get to those a little bit later. With that said, we will go ahead and take the very first call here. 814, you will kick us off. 814, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling us from tonight.
This is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland.
Hey, Ryan, always great to hear from you, man. What did you think of Dynamite?
It's always a interesting show and fresh since it's a live show.
Yeah.
But my question's on the CM Punk match that they're promoting with MJF. Is that a dog collar match, say, brutal, that it takes years off people's lives? Because I know that people that specialize in that match, they don't usually live very long for some reason.
Well, I mean, it's a brutal match, you know, no question about it. And, you know, look, I don't know, you know, it's a worked match, and I don't know that you can tie, like, that match, you know, to, like, logically tie that match to, you know, wrestlers' untimely passings. But either way, Eric, I think they're going to go for something brutal here. I mean, I think that it's set up for that. I think that's a, you know, logical end of the story, especially when you kind of, you know, put a bow on everything that happened tonight, next week, presumably. Like, to me, this if you're going to have that stipulation, you know, and AEW has not shied away throughout its history of, you know, delivering kind of gory matches when things called for them most of the time. I kind of see that going here the same way, but I don't know that you can apply, hey, you know, the dog collar match shortens people's careers and lives or whatnot. So, you know, your take on that.
Well, Roddy Piper is no longer with us. Greg Valentine is. That was the inspiration for this match. If you're talking about Mr. Brody Lee, obviously, he died way too young, but I don't know that it had anything to do with the dog collar match. I expect at the pay-per-view for maybe double juice, right? It's a dog collar match. You maybe aren't as bound by TBS. You know, I guess they've had blood on TBS a lot, mostly to Hangman Page. But you,
yeah.
You have the freedom to be as violent as you want to be without worrying about people clutching their pearls, because after all, they paid $50 a throw to watch the match. Ryan, do you plan on watching the pay-per-view based on the lineup you've heard so far?
I normally don't watch pay-per-views unless they're shown, like, in public places. So I don't know if anyone's going to be getting the pay-per-view anywhere.
I think some movie theaters are going to be showing AEW put out a press release today.
Okay, I'm going to look into that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's always a fun environment. I haven't done that for an AEW show, but I've been to things like that for other wrestling shows. And yeah, it's always fun. And, you know, people coming together, you know, safely as the pandemic, you know, cools here at least, is, gives things a renewed energy too. Ryan, back to you. Any, what's your other questions for us tonight?
Second question's on Jade Cargill. With this undefeated streak, I think she's going to do a champion against champion match, maybe like a year down the line against the AEW Women's Champion.
Eric, what do you think?
They certainly could do that. I don't see any reason to beat Jade Cargill yet. Although she almost beat herself tonight. She forgot to kick out at one point in that match against the Bunny. JR called attention to it, saying, "Did she have a brain fart?" I think that's exactly what happened. You're maybe in the heat of the match. You don't realize the referee's hand is hit twice and you forget to kick out. Aubrey Edwards is the one who ends up holding the bag there, because Aubrey has to just stop because she knows I can't count three, even if she doesn't kick out, because Jade has this streak. Looking ahead, you know, next year, Jade Cargill still undefeated. Who is the champ? Jade, I think, would have to progress a lot in the ring for them to put the women's world title on her. She's fine. You know, she's fine. She's quite an attraction to have the secondary belt on and to keep a streak going. I guess at this point, with Jade being a heel, you'd need a babyface women's world champion to make that work. Did Jade beat Thunder Rosa in the women's the TV title match, right? Tournament. And so,
correct.
Certainly, Jade will have a win over Rosa, assuming Rosa gets the belt off of Britt Baker at the pay-per-view next month. You could build to that, sure.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, you could absolutely do that, you know. And I think eventually that's where, like, if you're Tony Khan, you're sitting there going, okay, you know, I want to get to that spot. Not necessarily, like, you know, with Jade as TBS champion necessarily, but I think you want her in that world title mix at some point. I mean, he's investing a lot in her, and I think she's progressing nicely too as a talent. I thought tonight, yeah, she had that brain cramp in the match tonight, but generally speaking, I think Jade Cargill has come a long way since her debut. Her matches are a little bit better; they're a little bit crisper. She's always been fine as far as how she presents herself, and her just star aura is there, and that continues to be strong. So if it's me, I think you have to give it, you know, a year or 18 months, because she does still need some work. And then you have to have the belt around the world title on a babyface and presumably, you know, and hopefully a strong one. But I think that's where all roads go. And maybe she loses the TBS championship before that, or maybe not. But I think that Tony Khan sees her as a player in that division. And so when I look 18 months out, 24 months out, 2 years, you know, she's there. She's around it. Back to you, Ryan. Your final question for us tonight.
Yeah, my final question is on the Eddie Kingston promo, when Chris Jericho referred to Eddie as a baby face and Eddie didn't seem to know what that meant. Is AEW the first company, like major company, to mention baby face on their television program? And how many people do you think actually knew what that word meant? Because I'm one of probably the few people that got the Wrestling Tribune, which sort of like broke that word down for me.
Yeah, Eric, that was, you know, that was AEW going a little meta for sure. I don't know. I think that promo segment could have gone without that reference, but I mean, did it stand out to you? It honestly didn't really even stand out to me that much, Ryan. But Eric, what say you?
Well, before he that promo did not work tonight for a couple of reasons, but the main one being Chris Jericho throwing out all these insider terms. It reminded me of something Vince Russo might have booked in one of his many stops, and I don't I did not pay attention to Vince Russo's time in Impact, and I don't remember all of the latter era WCW that he booked. It wouldn't surprise me if he used the word babyface before Russo did in some sort of promo breaking the fourth wall. Before Jericho called Kingston a babyface, he said, "You look like a jobber." You know, I mean, it was inside terms, most of it was Jericho. Eddie talked about carnies, you know, carny wrestlers, you know, lying backstabbers. And does the crowd, I think AEW crowd knows what a babyface is, right? Their audience certainly does. I think probably most wrestling fans who are over the age of 12 at this point know what a babyface is or you know, and but the promo didn't work for me, and we'll probably unpack that as the show goes on here with other callers, I imagine.
Let's start, because I think I was significantly higher on it than you, Eric. I thought the insider terms, they didn't really resonate with me, but I see that angle for sure, where you're looking at that and you're going, okay, like that's just too cute and unnecessary. But when you kind of, if you can put a pin in that, I thought that they, like, going into this, Jericho and Kingston was kind of like a bit of an odd matchup to have, just because you have Chris Jericho, who's become in AEW like this beloved legacy babyface, and then you've got Eddie Kingston on the other side, who's this babyface who fans are passionate about. They know his story. They're kind of tied to his success and want to be behind him. So you've got this match brewing where, you know, you're going to naturally split the fan base and their reaction and who they're cheering for. And if they were going to try to position somebody as a heel or the bad guy or whatnot, that'd be a tough putt to sink, because so both of them are so entrenched kind of in that babyface role with the audience. And I thought the narrative that they told tonight with Jericho calling Kingston out for not being able to win the big one, disappointment, you're just a loser. Like, I thought that worked to give the match stakes that it didn't have going in. Like, it feels to me now like there's a serious reason for them to be wrestling each other. And it's not necessarily a new story around Eddie Kingston. I think they've dropped, you know, that kind of verbiage before, but this to me worked in that end to give the match stakes, give it a reason for happening, give it a little heat. And so that's what I took away, you know, walking out of the promo. Am I crazy, Eric, or did the other stuff just resonate stronger?
To me, so they did this to me seems like a rerun of what they did before Full Gear when they set up CM Punk versus Eddie Kingston. That one was really strong, and that one was hot, and it relied on a shared history and some past slights. This one just felt forced to me. I don't know if it was the awkwardness of Jericho's delivery. Jericho, I think, certainly was trying to play the heel here, although I don't think he was booed. You know, calling himself the influencer, I mean, come on. that's heelish. The purple gym shoes were a heat magnet. And calling Kingston a loser, like you said, the promo was really long. It forced, you know, it went like 15 minutes. It was like a Raw, beginning of a Raw talking segment. And so they had to cut match times later. And, you know, the part I liked, I guess Jericho got personal and near the end and talked about Kingston's uncle and father. and talked about how he's the big one. I mean, the parts that were not centered on breaking the fourth wall wrestling terms probably worked a little bit better. Jericho declared himself, "I am the big one." You know, he's trying to get over a new catchphrase every week. So he can trademark it, I guess, and make money off a T-shirt.
Those merch checks have to, you know, he's got to keep those coming in with those with those shirts.
I will say Jericho was the big one, and then he lost a bunch of weight and got in shape, so less of a big one.
Yeah, well, yep. I mean, that was noticeable tonight too. You know, Jericho's just appearance looked better than he has in quite some time. Did that stand out to you, Eric?
Yeah. I think we saw that last week in the match against in Ortiz. But in times when Kingston was talking, he was, you know, to Ryan's point, he sort of mocked, "What's a baby face?" I think Eddie was mocking Jericho's, almost mocking Jericho's use of insider terms, point, which is, you know, how much of the crowd knows what that is? Aren't you sort of skipping a step? But you almost needed to have annotations in real time for the viewer, you know, like the old pop-up videos on VH1, like explaining the backstory. Cause like we got such deep cuts from Kingston. It was, he talked about Tenryu and War, which is like a 90s Japanese promotion that, I know existed, but I don't think I've ever seen a match. I mean, just deep cuts along the way. So that's why the promo didn't really didn't work for me on balance. Plus, it was too long.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, fair enough. We'll see what our other callers say about too, breaking the tie. Ryan, thanks so much. Anything else to add tonight before we move on to some other callers?
Pitbull number two was the other wrestler that came to mind that didn't last too long, but specialized in the dog collar match. And not sure if I'll be able to make the theater because I think Charlie Haas is wrestling in the area that night. I really want to check him out.
You could always replay, and you know that AEW will remind you of what of all the happenings on the pay-per-view. So you'll be caught up soon enough.
Thanks for making the call.
Yeah, always good to talk to you. Thanks for making it. We'll go on here to 410. 410, your turn. Go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from. I think this is Reverend Keith from Baltimore. Is that correct?
Yes, it is, Zach. How are you, sir? It's always good to hear your voice, and good evening, Mr. Crow.
Hello, Reverend Keith.
Great to hear from you, man. What did you think of the show tonight?
Yes, I just want to bring up one point, but it's going to encompass two separate feuds, okay? Now, it seems to me that both the CM Punk MJF promo tonight and the Kingston Chris Jericho promo kind of are going in the same direction. Follow me on this. Now, months ago, it was MJF that said he was going to bring out the true inner sides of CM Punk, that he's not the true man of his word coming out of retirement after 7 years to hand slap kiss babies and be the baby face, pardon the pun. I know you were just talking about that. Okay. Now, with the emotional promo, which was 5-star tonight by MJF, 5-star, it makes you wonder if, in fact, he's on that path to prove to the wrestling world who he says he is, and that as a result of this, Punk will turn heel. Likewise, in the Jericho promo with Kingston, he was just insulting Kingston, just like he insulted Santana a couple weeks back. So it seems like both of them are on a trajectory to turn heel at the conclusion of Revolution, and that's the way I took it. Give me your thoughts. That's my only point, but it encompasses both those feuds. Give me your thoughts on the potentiality of both Jericho turning heel after his match with Kingston and Punk turning heel, win or lose, after his match with MJF at Revolution. Thanks for taking my call, guys. Have a wonderful night.
Thanks for making it, Keith. Always great to hear from you, man. Yeah, Eric, so I think I can see an avenue to Jericho turning heel. I think he already kind of did, as far as tonight goes. Like, you hit the nail on the head. The purple shoes, running down Eddie Kingston. He just kind of presented himself as a jerk out there, pretty much. Just kind of like was just thumbing his nose at Eddie the whole time. So to me that I can buy that. Punk, while you never put anything past him as far as what he might or might not do, I just don't see it happening within this MJF feud, because it's been so serious, and the goal clearly has been to elevate MJF to an even higher level as a heel, that if Punk turns heel in the middle of that match, it almost undercuts what they've done with MJF a little bit. So I you never say never, but Eric, I don't see Punk turning heel. Whereas Jericho, you can definitely see that with what they've set up in both feuds.
Yeah, I mean, Jericho, I agree. He's already turned heel. He just hasn't. He's turned heel on the mic. He has not turned heel in the ring yet, right? Because he hasn't had a match. So he'll be. You know, probably more aggressive and using heel tactics in his match against Kingston at the pay-per-view. There's just, if they're doing, you know, I don't think MJF Punk is setting up a double turn, right? Because MJF still has his feud with Wardlow as a heel and, you know, possibly his, you know, a run with the AEW world title as soon as Double or Nothing that they announced for Vegas tonight. And so there's just not enough time to do that, right? The groundwork has all – until tonight, the groundwork had all been fairly traditional. Punk doing babyface things, MJF doing heel things. And, you know, I think tonight will eventually be revealed, probably next week, as just MJF trying to get in Punk's head and soften him up so he's not he loses that killer edge, the killer edge you need to win a dog collar match. And maybe that's the key to Punk winning or Punk losing, right? Losing a third time. You know, he lost twice in Chicago to MJF. Maybe. And if you're really looking to build, if it's not a 50-50 booking situation and MJF is going over, you're not doing the Bret Hart, Steve Austin double turn in Chicago or at the Rosemont Horizon at that one WrestleMania I went to with my late father. I don't think you're doing that kind of thing, which you'd almost sort of need to happen if you were going to do it in that match or after that match. That's not to say Punk won't eventually turn heel in AEW. Probably they'll try it at some point, I would think.
Yeah. I think you could definitely try it. I just don't think it works here. And honestly, you know, I think Punk as a babyface still has legs to it for sure. And I mean, really, it's been this feud that has really, I think, kind of got him back fully into a comfort zone on the microphone and in the ring too. I mean, he, you know, has made great strides since coming back in the ring, but like, to me, it feels like the timing is there and there's just a lot for him left to do as a babyface. I mean, you've got stuff that he's got a program with Adam Cole that is out there. He hasn't really worked with the Young Bucks yet. I think that makes a lot of sense. You know, depending on whether or not Kenny Omega comes back as a heel or babyface, that match is still out there. So I just don't know that it's the time. And I think the priority, as you said, Eric, is MJF. I mean, I think he's going to have a very big summer for AEW. And in order to do that, I don't think you want anything overshadowing kind of him as a heel. And Punk turning heel would be a very big deal. And I think you want to lean into MJF at this point. And I think that's what they'll do. Eric, let's continue the calls here. 217. 217, you're up. State your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, this is Larry. I'm calling from Beardstown. We're about 45 miles west of the state capital of Springfield.
Larry, great to hear from you. Well, what did you think of Dynamite tonight? Thanks for calling.
Hey, overall, I liked it. It was, say what you will about the pacing and the time of the long talking. I kind of had a thought for just a second during particularly the Jericho Kingston promo, I almost jokingly said I was watching AEW Raw, you know, with the length of the talking. But, you know, I overall liked it. I mean, you know, there's good things and not so good things about the show. Like you'd mentioned earlier, Jade Cargill showed a little bit of still being green, but to her credit, she's got a heck of a presence, and I think they've really done a good job. And as strange as it is to say, you know, considering that she's, you know, the TBS champion, you know, protecting, you know, trying to hide the weaknesses and show her strengths.
I think so too, and I think that's been a strong part of the way Tony Khan has been booking a lot of his acts. Like he's not asking people to go out there and do stuff, something that they're not comfortable doing or not ready to do. And I think Jade Cargill is a very good example of that. Wardlow too, you know, in terms of how he's been built up. Like he's not being out there to have 10, 15 minute matches. It's people want to see the power bombs. Like that's what he does. And so Tony Khan leans into that. Same thing with Jade Cargill. Like her strength right now anyway is that presence, and it's the character, it's the confidence, it's the charisma. And, you know, that's what she leans into. So tonight was a good night for her as far as that goes. She needs Eric to grow in the ring. But I agree with Larry that, you know, you're doing the right things by just leaning into where your acts are strong. And Jade Cargill, you know, kind of leads the pack as far as that goes.
I mean, the one positive thing I can say about Jade tonight is part of the match. I mean, she was in there with the Bunny, who's not exactly Kenny Omega when it comes to in-ring work.
Yeah.
Jade was working a body part. She picked a body part and she worked it old school, right? The arm and the shoulder. There was, I think, a story about her, you know, getting some lessons from Bryan Danielson, about how to work. And so maybe we're starting to see that because that's a guy who certainly would pick a body part and work on it. They really did a high wire act there at the end, I guess. You know, first of all, the Bunny got the jobber treatment. She didn't get her intro music. They were shaving time at this point because they had so much to pack in, and Jericho's self-indulgent promo went so long. But they were on a high wire act because, you know, Jade, they asked Jade to do a live promo, which is not something that they normally ask her to do. Usually she does a lot of pre-tapes backstage with smart Mark Sterling. And then she asked who's next. And of course there were Goldberg chants, which I love. but then they sent out Conti out there, Ty Conti, to, you know, two wrestlers now not experienced at live promos. I know Ty has talked about how she's trying to get comfortable with that. And they set up a match for the pay-per-view. So I am fairly certain we can already say, pencil in what the worst match of the pay-per-view is going to be, Jade and Conti.
Yeah.
Hopefully it'll be, you know, a passable two stars and they'll remember to kick out when they're supposed to. But that seems like a match you'd want to have pre-taped so you could edit it, not throw them out there live. I don't know that that's setting those two wrestlers up and putting them in a position to succeed.
Yeah. I hope that they don't get over ambitious with that match. I think if you can put together it's possible to put together there a good, you know, 5 minute match, you know, but if you ask them to go 10 or 12, then I think you're going to run into problems. I thought Ty Conti tonight, right before she cut that promo, it seemed like she just blanked there for a second. Like she was kind of holding the microphone and like she was about to say something, but it took, you know, a few seconds for her to actually get going. And I felt for her there for a minute because it wasn't that long a time, but when you're out there not saying anything and you're supposed to be saying something, it feels a lot longer than it is. And it almost got to that point of like, all right, hey, Ty, you say something, speak. But then she did. And she got, I guess, eventually where she needed to go. But yeah, I mean, this is another just kind of, I don't think the finish is in doubt here either. I mean, they only have a week to put any more sizzle on it as far as build goes. And they're certainly, you know, Ty Conti's not in a position right now to get that Jade Cargill win. So I think this match is swimming upstream in terms of what they can do to even make it interesting outside of the fact that you've got two unseasoned performers in there, Eric.
Yeah, I don't Conti can have a decent match when she's in there with somebody experienced or decent. I don't think Jade is that opponent, but hopefully they will rehearse that one ahead of time and have a good match laid out.
Yeah, yeah. Larry, back to you. Any other thoughts on tonight's show or questions, comments?
Well, a brief comment on dog collars. I think Mad Dog Buzz Sawyer had a collar match or two in his life, and I think it's safe to say that the dog collar matches didn't shorten his life so much as I think that drugs may have.
Right.
As far as the rest of the show, I mean, you can say what you will about some of what AEW chooses to do, but it's an interesting show at its worst. And you pointed out something during the Jade Cargill promo after the match. As soon as I was watching it, live, and as soon as she said, "What's next?" I had this thought for about 2 seconds. Come on, crowd, don't disappoint me. And they started the Goldberg chant. I was like, by golly, there it is. I got a good chuckle out of that. I don't think that was the intended consequence of what she said, but it came out. I don't think it looked bad. I thought it was kind of good. It proved that wrestling fans there were knowledgeable of what's going on in other places besides AEW and, to a lesser extent, the history of wrestling. But I like the show. The MJF thing, the first I thought it was just going to be this – he was just going to do this half-sincere thing, and in the end he was just going to go totally off on the crowd or he would get Punk out there and then – turn on him, but that was about as well done in that situation as I think they could have done it. And the way Punk came out and reacted to it, it added to it, and I really did enjoy that. The opening, that's again interesting, but it's kind of a cluster all over the place. I thought, I didn't know what you guys necessarily thought of that opening tag team situation.
Yeah, we haven't talked about that yet, Eric. You had a lot of teams in that match and a lot of people that kind of like, I don't want to say protect, but some stories, woven throughout that. But I think, going into it, my thought was, to watch really three teams, like Santana and Ortiz, Red Dragon, and the Young Bucks. And I think, they clearly leaned into the Red Dragon Young Bucks story and kind of them being on two sides and Adam Cole kind of being in the middle of two groups of friends. The Battle Royal, I don't know, to me it was what it was. I think it was a little bit slow at the beginning. I thought the crowd, it took a bit for them to come along, but by the end I think they did. And I think by the time they got to the finish with, Kyle O'Reilly kind of faking that he couldn't, who was that he threw out of the ring? John Silver, out of the ring. Like, I think by the time they got to that moment, the crowd was invested in what they did. And now you've got another chapter in the Red Dragon Young Bucks story. So, Eric, I'll ask you this. What did you think of that angle itself? And then pivot to how Adam Cole fits into this, because the world title got some screen time tonight, but it was minimal compared to some other things that are happening on the show. And you have Adam Cole, prominently featured in this Red Dragon Young Bucks story. And like, I don't know, it seems like there's more investment in that angle than there is this Adam Page Cole match for the world title. And so it's like, I think you have a good thing going here with Red Dragon and Young Bucks, but it's really consuming some time of Adam Cole, and he's, 10 days out or whatever from an AEW world title match. And what to me should be like a signature match for Adam Page's championship reign. So it's a mixed bag when you kind of break down the angle between those two teams.
I think the Battle Royal sucked out loud. The crowd was completely dead for large swaths of it. The crowd tonight overall, if we get a live correspondent to call in, they were dead for stretches. They seemed to pop for stars. It seemed like a WWE crowd, to be honest. At least that's all I came across on TV. But they were justified in being dead for that Battle Royal. A lot of punching and kicking, and it when they got down to six single dudes, like their tag team partners had been tossed out, and it was just six, three face, three heel. You know, I thought, oh man, maybe they're going to pick up the pace. It's going to become a scramble, and then it didn't really. It never really got out of second gear. I guess the Kyle O'Reilly cheating to win, and I think he threw Matt Jackson out of the ring at the end as Matt Jackson got rid of John Silver. I think that was good because it furthered that story. But the problem is, I don't think Red Dragon has really been established why are they so great in AEW? You know, I get all their history, right, from PWG, success in Japan and all that, but they don't Kyle O'Reilly really hasn't been around that much. He became a dad, and so he was off TV for several weeks. And so, they did come back to it later, and they had the Cutler cam backstage, and the Bucks accused of Red Dragon of a double cross, and then Adam Cole looked conflicted. Everybody's always blaspheming Hangman Adam Page, and I'm a big Adam Page fan, and I do generally get the complaints that he feels like he's secondary and he's the champion. I sort of think that has a little bit of merit, but you know, I think this week made sense. Page got revenge for last week's attack by Red Dragon and Adam Cole. Adam Cole, you know, suckered him in, made him look like a dumb baby face by shaking his hand based on their shared history. And then Red Dragon attacked him. So, Paige was getting his revenge this week, which is good. Takes a little bit of the sting of being a dumb baby face away. Silver was still around to help. That was smart. And Paige's promo, the story time, I was a little bit worried he was going to go full Edge, like Edge on Raw Monday. I think he recounted his history in wrestling at every WrestleMania ever, right? And so when Paige started with the, let me tell you a little story about 2008, I was like, closed my eyes and winced. I thought it was going to be terribly long and boring, but it wasn't, you know, and Paige, you know, he got sort of one-upped last week in the last couple of weeks in the promos because Cole is such a better talker. And so Paige got a little bit of his heat back with, I'm the better Adam and you're going to be, I'm going to bury you. And he got to flip him the bird, Stone Cold style. And he had his boom line at the end. So probably need to put some heat back on Adam Cole ahead of the title match. You've got next week's Go Home show to do that so that you set up Paige get revenge at the pay-per-view, and maybe to your points, to your point, Zach, it's possible they're doing the Red Dragon Young Bucks can't get along thing to pull focus from Cole, giving him an excuse when he loses, right, at the pay-per-view to Paige.
Yeah, and again, that's what I mean. Like, I think it has, you know, it's a good, I think it tells a good story, but I just, I don't know. I want that AEW world title to stand out more than it does. And tonight it just seemed like I'm with you on Paige's promo. I thought it made sense. I thought it was logical. I think you had kind of like that fiery Adam Page babyface out there. And I thought he was good, but it seemed like it just played in the background of this Red Dragon Young Bucks thing with Cole in the middle of that, rather than being like the sole focus. And I think, you know, it's an ensemble show, and so you're gonna get some of that. But like, you know, I don't know. Do you think that match is hot enough to main event with it, or do you expect them to main event the show with the dog collar match?
I think Tony Khan usually main events with his world title match unless he has a reason. You know, unless he has a reason not to, right? I mean, So that would be what I expect to happen. I think is the only time they didn't main event with a pay-per-view was when they did that, the pandemic, the first thing where they were running around Jacksonville Jaguar Stadium.
yes,
Inner Circle versus the Elite, right?
Yeah, I think
that was a main event of that show, but. But other than that, I think that's what Tony Khan is a traditionalist. It's weird because even though it's an ensemble show and the world title, even when Kenny Omega was holding it, he did not have a string of strong challengers set up for him after Moxley, right? It was
right.
They had to go to a three-way match with Orange Cassidy and Pac, and then they had to do Christian, right? So, you know, So the world title is often secondary in this promotion, no matter who holds it, I guess I would say.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's not, this is not a knock on Adam Page. It's just that, you know, I think, again, tonight, and again, look, the build's not over. You still have 1 week, and I think, you know, if I'm Tony Khan anyway, you know, I'm putting – you know, a major kind of segment that brings home Cole versus Page. Like, give it some, like you said, give Cole some heat. You know, you had Page kind of get his one up back, and now you go to the pay-per-view. So it's not that it's that all hope is lost. I just, sometimes it just, to me, doesn't stand out enough. And today it just felt like, okay, this world title program between Cole and Page is just like, we're going to do this here because we have this other broader story that we're telling, rather than the Cole and Page angle being the sole focus. It may be a way to book the match, though, too. You know, where,
well,
like you said,
part of it is WWE is so much the opposite, right? I mean, you look at that WrestleMania main event, Roman Reigns,
yeah,
and Brock Lesnar.
Yeah.
Literally everybody and everything on both on SmackDown and Raw has been sacrificed to make that the biggest match that they can possibly make it. And so that's the only focus, right?
A stupendous match, yes.
Right. The undercard, WWE doesn't care about the undercard. They don't spend a lot of effort or energy, and they kind of never have, really, right? I mean, that's just Vince McMahon's philosophy. Tony Khan builds up. I mean, this pay-per-view lineup, we've got 9 matches, and a lot of them I'm excited for. So
yeah,
that's a good thing. But I guess, you know, the question gets answered every time AEW does a pay-per-view. If you're not focused on one match, can you still draw pay-per-view buys, right? Whereas Vince McMahon's like, the only thing that matters is the main event. It's the only thing that's ever mattered, dating back to his father and Bruno Sammartino's days, right? And so they put all their eggs in that basket. That's what you get. So it may be AEW is suffering by comparison to what everybody's been used to for 60 years.
Yeah. I mean, to your point, the card is shaping up really nicely, like holistically. No question about that. Next week, Eric, we're going to find out another battle royal. We'll get the other team for the who's going to be involved in the tag team title match at Revolution. Go ahead.
So much suspense. Who do you think is going to win that one, guys? I can't even tell.
Yes. So, well, you're answering my question, because it was going to be, is it anybody but the Young Bucks at this point? I'm going to go on a limb, and I'm going to say you're in the Young Bucks camp. You're putting your money on them next week.
Yeah, I would love to see Santana and Ortiz get a push. I think they've been underused, and I think they're really talented. But the way the story, you know, I also like booking that makes sense. And what clearly makes sense is Red Dragon and the Bucks in this three-way not getting along. And I would presume at this point Bobby Fish eats the pin to Jungle Boy or Luchasaurus when, you know, the two heel teams can't get along.
Right.
And so, you know, I suppose you could, if you wanted to delay this Bucks Red Dragon thing, I guess, this doesn't make sense. Yeah. Having the Red Dragon cost the Bucks the Battle Royal next week does not make sense from a storyline perspective, because then the match you immediately want to see is Red Dragon versus the Bucks, and you're not getting that at the pay-per-view. So I don't think they'll do that. I can't talk myself out of the Bucks winning that Battle Royal. Larry, you have any thoughts on who's going to win the Casino Battle Royal, Tag Battle Royal?
Honestly, at this point, I've got no idea, but that's kind of a good thing, because it's a lot better to go into a show as a fan, at least for me as a fan, to go in and say, hey, I don't know what's going to happen, instead of going into, like you do with a lot of Raws or even, you know, Tonight's show, you kind of could predict who is going to win or lose. So for me as a fan, I think it's kind of nice to actually be able to watch a show and not know who's going to win, or have a real strong sense of who's going to win.
But Bucks win the Battle Royal next week, you think?
Possibly.
Yeah,
but I'm not 100%.
They alluded to it tonight.
The house
they
on
alluded
it,
to it. Yeah, please don't bet your house on a wrestling match. Yeah, don't do that.
I believe the app set limits on wrestling because it's scripted, right? You can only bet like $25 or something. Yeah,
I think so. But you know, they alluded to it tonight too. I mean, they said out loud, you know, Kyle O'Reilly's kind of reasoning for doing what he did was, hey, you guys get another chance next week, another chance next week. So yeah, I think that's how they go. Larry, any other comments for us tonight, man, on the show, or any other thoughts and questions?
No, I don't think I really have any, other than, you know, what I brought up, and y'all are doing a great job of going over everything on the show and giving your commentary on that. There's probably some callers behind me that would like to get on. I don't know if you guys have a live correspondent reporting yet or not, but I want to let you guys get to that. And thanks, as always, for taking my call.
Thank you, Larry, for making it. Definitely call again. Appreciate it. All right, we'll keep it going here. Yeah, the plan is to have an on-site correspondent. A Rampage should be the Rampage taping should be wrapping up here in a little bit. So hopefully we can get to that. But in the meantime, we will go to 586. 586, thanks for holding so long. State your name and where you're calling from tonight.
Joel, just Sterling Heights, which is a little bit north of Detroit.
Hey, Joel, great to hear from you. What'd you think of Dynamite?
You know, I watched a majority of it. I kind of dropped in and out periodically. I kind of wanted to go back to what was recently said. I'm trying to rack my brain here. Give me a second. I'm sorry. So there's a couple bullet points I kind of had. One of them was – I can't remember my first one, but so, you know, Vince Russo was kind of referenced by your co-host there. And it was in regards to the term babyface being thrown around, and there was some assumptions on Vince Russo's booking. But, you know, how long has Vince Russo been out of the business and people are still talking about him? I don't mean to just go to bat for Vince Russo, but everywhere he's written for has either gone up in ratings or achieved their highest ratings ever at the time that he was there. And if Vince Russo was booking for AEW and booking the exact same way as Tony Khan is, I feel like people would have as much vitriol as they do for previous Vince Russo booking as they do for Tony Khan's booking, because I do feel like there's a lot of parallels. Tony Khan obviously is a fan of a lot of forms of wrestling. He's obviously a fan of the Attitude Era. You can kind of see that in his booking, but I kind of think that's odd that, number one, people keep bringing him back up, yet they think that he's somehow irrelevant. If he's irrelevant, you'd think he'd disappear. The other thing is that they can kind of convolute Tony Khan, who they want to praise for his booking. Again, meanwhile, if you were to kind of switch places, you would get the reciprocal attitude towards Vince Russo. And I'll let you guys comment on that while I kind of try to remember what my first point was going to be.
Fair enough. Thanks, Joel. Yeah, you know, yeah, I mean, I certainly don't want to take this down a path of analyzing Vince Russo, but I, you know, look, I think Tony Khan pulls from a lot of different bookers, because you're right. He knows and has followed and remembers, you know, a lot of different types of wrestling. So I think you're going to see that. You're going to see that everywhere. To me, you know, look, that type of insider stuff, it's not, I don't know. Again, it didn't even really resonate with me, but when you call it out, I still, you know, and again, this isn't a knock on Vince Russo. I mean, you've got like Cody did similar things, like, where it's just like, you just don't need it. You don't need that. And nobody at this point who you're trying to attract to watch AEW on a regular basis, that's, I don't think that type of talk is gonna bring them into the fold. It's gonna make them confused more than anything. And so, to me, it's not about, like, oh, you know, Vince Russo's bookie style and the way he, you know, scripted promos and the way he used insider terms. It's not about him and, hey, it's still relevant because that stuff's still happening. It's, hey, maybe that was relevant at the time, and at the time when Russo did that kind of thing for the first time, it was flashier because it had never really been done before. But, you know, we're way past that at this point in time. And I think, you know, AEW has the audience already that line and that type of talk is going to like mean anything to. And in order to grow that company, I just don't think you just don't go there. Say the same thing, but say it in a different way. I know I've got, you know, good friends who are fans of AEW, who watch every single week and probably know what a baby face is, but might not know what the heck a jobber is. And so once you go down that road, you really alienate that group of fans that you're trying to get to watch your product, Eric, when you just can just leave those lines out and get to the same place in the end without any problem.
Yeah, I mean, I think I brought up – Vince Russo gets brought up today as an example of what not to do, right? I mean, his only successful run as a booker or a creative force was when his ideas were being filtered by Vince McMahon, Pat Patterson, and whoever else in the Attitude Era. Outside of that, he's been an unmitigated disaster everywhere else he went. His time in WCW was abysmal. Some of the most embarrassing stuff you'll ever see. I don't think he has a great place in history. And I think that's sort of like conventional wisdom. I don't think I'm like going out on a big limb there. As for the use, you know, using the insider terms and all that to come across as a look at us, we're edgy in a shoot. I think that's as played out as like those crash pad bumps, right? It's just something everybody's seen a million times. Nobody wants to see it anymore. You know, to quote Wade's recap is up. Wade says, I did enjoy Kingston asking what a babyface is. Jericho didn't need to use that term. It just comes across as pandering to insider fans to score points these days rather than some indication of it being more real or a shoot. So I think that's Wade's conventional wisdom on that part as well. I would agree with that.
Yeah, and that's my point, too. It's like, and I think you're right on Vince Russo, by the way, but you just don't need it. You just don't need it. I don't know. That's not going to, like, to me, it didn't enhance the promo. It didn't enhance the story. It didn't, you know, it just made people in the audience who knew go, whoa, like, okay, they said babyface. It's like, we've seen that. We've seen that. We've been there. We've done that. And so you just get there differently. That's my take. Joel, back to you on any, you know, follow-up comments or that other topic, if you remembered it.
Yeah, I don't know. I somewhat disagree a little bit on the Vince Russo somewhat, but we don't need to really dive down there. I just think it's kind of funny when people kind of introduce this great filter that Vince McMahon was. That filter has been there ever since Vince Russo left. That filter has been there for, what, 15, 20 years now? If that filter is so great, why does the product today not reflect the fandom and the overall – complexity of the way the show is written, why is that not reflected as much since then as it did way back then? You would think that the great filter would be able to filter anybody coming in. That just entails to me that obviously this, quote, great filter really isn't that great of a filter, and you had a better backing of writers that understood how to write more complex television that would draw people's attention versus just going after the hardcore wrestling fan. I don't know if you would want to re-comment on that statement, but I kind of remembered my first statement I wanted to make, which was based off of the main
Go
event
ahead.
Booking
Go
when ahead. It comes to WWE. Thing that we look at is booked main event-wise. Boxing, sure, you have matches that lead up to the main event, but nobody's buying the boxing match for the mid-card stuff. Maybe there's a handful of people that are, but very few people do. I don't buy tickets to a concert to see the intro act. You know, I buy it to see the main event. So I feel like that's what that booking entails. And you kind of commented about how, you know, that's maybe worked for the last 40 or 60 years, but it maybe doesn't work today. But if it's worked for the last 40 or 60 years and you have a company that's generating $1 billion in revenue, regardless of how it's done, whether it be, you know, the Saudi, whatever your issues are with, you know, the potential Saudi deals or selling their streaming networks, they're still generating a record amount of money. So you can't discredit that kind of adage.
You know, I'm going to step in here
kind of comparing it to a brand new.
I didn't say it was bad. I said it was a contrast. AEW books an entire card and doesn't put the main event as the sole focus. WWE does. I didn't say that's
you
bad.
Look at comparing ratings and comparing revenue.
Yeah, I think
comparing ratings and comparing revenue, you can't necessarily say one has a better plan than the other. You can obviously look at the evidence and kind of go, okay, you can't be definitive. Sure, over the time frame, if you stretch this out, maybe one might overtake the other. But right now, and what has worked historically is obviously the WWE model.
Hey, Joel,
not
let me jump in real quick.
Not
here.
The TNA model, not the WCW model. It's been the WWE model that's been the standard, and maybe we're kind of used to that standard, but that standard is a standard for a reason, and I'll let you go. I apologize for kind of continuing there.
No,
the other
Joel,
thing would be Vince's filter was a lot better in 1996 and 1997 than it is when he's in his 70s, 25 years later. So,
Hey, you know what? I didn't have, I did not have a Vince Russo debate on the bingo card for tonight as to what may or may not come up. The other thing is, and look, I want to get back to Dynamite because we still have a lot to cover there. But the other thing here too is like it's a different, I think, world, like landscape. I mean, before, pro wrestling was a lot like boxing in terms of how they drew money and how, like, where their revenue came from, ticket sales and big main events, just like they do today, that, that draws money. That draws people out. That puts butts in seats and what have you. That was, like, their sales pay-per-views. That was, the main way for WWE and wrestling companies to make money back then. Well, it's a different ballgame now in a lot of ways. I mean, AEW, they're a major part of their revenue is that television deal. Same thing with WWE. And so you want to book differently and you want to present your show differently in an environment like that, I think, where you have a lot of acts who are over as top stars so that you can maintain an audience for a longer period of time. And I think that there's pluses to that, but at the same time, you can also still frame a handful of guys in a strong way. And I think that's where you want to see AEW go. I don't think there's anything wrong with the formula of, hey, like, we want to present a lot of strong angles with a lot of overacts. That's the goal. That's great. To me, it's just that, and call me old school, but I still like that world title being at the top. That was my only point with it. But it's hard to compare 40 years ago, Eric, to today.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm looking at this AEW card, and I didn't think Dynamite was overall. Dynamite tonight did what they were supposed to do. They set up the pay-per-view matches that are in 10 or 11 days. We've got, I think we're up to 9 matches. Not everything worked for me. Jade, Jericho, there was this bizarre 6-man that was set up that feels weird and tacked on with Andrade and Private Party versus Sting, Sammy, and Darby Allin. They set that up for the pay-per-view. I feel like they could have waited until after whatever happens between Andrade and Sammy on Rampage to do that. But they did, I looked at, coming into tonight's show, one of the questions I had was, are they going to logically sort of take the next step in all of the pay-per-view matches? And man, they did. They set up new matches and they furthered the stories in some way, sometimes with angles, sometimes with promo packages. In the case of the women's title match, that big angle will be shot on for Rampage on Friday. And so they're, you look at this card and man, I'm excited about MJF Punk. I'm excited about Moxley and Danielson. And then I'm excited about Paige and Cole, but probably in that order, right? I mean, it's the world title match is the third most exciting match for me to draw. And so I think you can also draw by having a really strong card top to bottom. And that's there's a reason AEW is getting 150,000 or more people to plunk down $50 four times a year, right, for these shows. I would argue it's probably the depth of the card more than, a single world title match. It's just a different approach, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, it is. And I think – again, just like with anything, it's going to have its pros and it's going to have its cons. And I think, like you said, I mean, right now that world title match is probably third from the top in terms of like intrigue and interest. If you're Tony Khan, like maybe you want to look at that, but also you never know what's going to click either. And man, I mean, that MJF Punk stuff is really, 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 really working. And so, you know, sometimes it's natural to have that happen when you have just a bunch of talent out there creating, and you never know what's going to stick most, you know, with the audience. All right, man. Okay, we're rolling here. Let's go to 773. 773, you're up. State your name and where you're calling from tonight.
Boris from Chicago.
Hey, Boris, good to hear from you, man. What did you think of Dynamite?
Hey. I wonder why they've given Jay the Goldberg format, but why they just don't let her just, you know, walk through a few characters, you know, few wrestlers, just establish that she's dominant instead of, you know, these long drawn out matches that show that both persons are green. It's like, that's my first thing. It's like, you know, well, it's too late now, but should they have let her get the Goldberg kind of run? Because they're doing it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, Eric, what do you think?
I agree, Boris, that they should set Jade up to succeed, and putting her in a 7-minute match with the Bunny, who's not a very good worker, is not the way to do it. I think the Bunny, who didn't even get her music, she didn't even get a music intro because they were pressed for time. I think the Bunny could have eaten a 2-minute squash to Jade Cargill, because Jade is, you know, somebody they're building with, and the Bunny is, you know, there to be cannon fodder at this point, make her goofy faces.
Conceptually, I agree with you guys. I think, like, that's how ideally you'd want to present her. I think, to me, and this is just my opinion, I don't have any, like, reporting or news on this, but I also get the sense at the same time that they're trying to get her to maybe, like, make strides quicker than usual. And so it's like, okay, we got to get her ring time, just like, you know, just like anything else. I mean, she doesn't have a house show scheduled to work. She doesn't, you know, she's not going to go out onto the independents to get those reps. So I wonder that, like, when they book these matches, they try to balance. Okay, we're gonna have it inevitably be a squash in the end, but we got to get Jade Cargill some live reps too. And so I wonder if they're balancing that, and still giving her the undefeated streak, still making her look dominant in the end, but just a little bit of a softer tone in that regard, just to get her some seasoning faster than she would otherwise. That's my take on kind of what we're seeing. But I think presenting her as just a killer would be efficient at this point. Boris, back to you. Anything else tonight?
Yeah, I'm gonna try to run through some things real fast. I think at the point we're starting to see with AEW, we need a Paul Heyman, some like maybe someone to, you know, stabilize. I'm sorry, Tony Khan, because I mean he's okay, but you can tell that we need a Regal or someone, like you said, they were talking about the other guy. But we need someone like to, you know what I'm saying, get in there and they know what they're doing. Like Paul Heyman is doing real good, right? So we need Tony Khan needs someone like a Paul Heyman to hide these weaknesses and help him to show him how to do this great, because – you know, he's hiding some weaknesses, but we're seeing throughout the show that there's some ups and downs, and it's brutal. What do you think about that? Do y'all know anybody we can probably put in there? Because we know Regal is out there now. But who would y'all think would be that Paul Heyman?
Are you talking about an on-screen authority figure or someone behind the scenes?
No, not someone. Okay, what they doing with Paul Heyman? Paul Heyman, remember, before he got with Roman Reigns, he was actually about to get about 6 stars over, I believe. You know, I don't know the actual number anymore. But then they pulled him from all them guys, all them characters, and just put him right with Roman Reigns. But we knew that Paul Heyman from ECW, he did the whole roster. You know, he that's how everybody got over, because, you know, people that couldn't wrestle or the people was bad. He hid all that and made he did an ensemble with ECW, right? So I was thinking the same thing for AEW. We need somebody to come in there and just wrangle Tony Khan in. You know what I'm saying? And show him how show him how to do this.
Yeah, you know, I guess it's fundamentally, I think I just disagree. I mean, not that Paul Heyman would be a bad person to have around, or
Paul
William
Heyman
Regal
just
for that.
Example. I don't want Paul Heyman here. He's an example.
Yeah, no, that's what I mean. Whether it's Heyman or Regal or somebody else, I don't know, Eric. I mean, I think generally speaking, and look, you're gonna have hits and misses. I mean, no doubt about it. But when you look at kind of the entirety of what Tony Khan has put together here in the last, you know, two plus years, I just think that there's a lot more hits than there are misses, and I think AEW as a company is further along than they really have any right to be at this point in time, and further along than I thought they would have been, you know, 2 years ago if you were to ask me. So, I don't mind watching Tony Khan try to navigate this thing further, you know, and he's got more stars to play with now. He's going to have to, you know, work and now do kind of the business end of pro wrestling and let some people go and not re-sign some folks. And you're dealing with egos, clearly. You know, we saw that with all the news last week with Cody, that it's not going to be the last time that happens. So I don't know, Eric. You know, again, you're not going to say no to Regal backstage, but I think Tony Khan has done enough where it's like, I trust him with the keys and want to see where he goes from here.
It's Tony Khan's money, and so he started this company in part because he saw a chance to make money and he wanted to be a booker. And you saw the first 3 months of AEW television, Dynamite in October, when it started October 2019 through the right before Christmas in 2019, they had sort of a booking committee with the Bucks and Kenny Omega and Cody Rhodes, the EVPs. And Tony Khan said that wasn't working for him. And you saw that, right? Everyone remembers the end of 2019. They had that disastrous angle with a Dark Order just laying out the Elite, and there were the bad punches that looked like crap.
You should have been
just,
in first place.
It just didn't work. And Tony Khan took the book, and I agree that he's had more successes than failures. I will say this. Wade Keller and Todd Martin on an episode of The Fix within the last year talked about maybe AEW could benefit from somebody who sort of was I don't think they said assistant booker, but sort of a continuity person, you know,
exactly,
to make sure that angles threads don't get dropped. I think AEW has done, maybe they've done that and we just don't know, but AEW has been doing a lot better at that. Storylines tend to pay off and they don't get dropped as much as they used to. And so, but you know, someone who can take a look at what everybody has planned and say, hey, we don't want to do two distraction finishes in a row or two promos with the same theme, right? You need kind of a quality. I think what they said was a quality control person to sort of have that 30,000 foot view. I think maybe what you're talking about, to make sure that things are a little bit smoother week to week, maybe than you know, a little bit better than they are right now. Not that they're bad now, but you can always improve.
Yeah. Boris, any other final comments?
Stuff.
We got to get to our on-site correspondent,
yes,
man. So maybe one more.
Absolutely. Now, my fun stuff. This is my fun stuff. When it got down to in the beginning of the show with all them tag teams, when it got down to just one person per team, I just wish the House Black came in to destroy all the tag teams because I was just done with that. And because I was like, oh, come on, we actually going in. So no team is good enough to actually win this without the shenanigans. So I want the House of Black to come in and to destroy that. And then when the segment between Jericho and Jericho now, so as he said, we didn't want entertainment, I was like, right there, just hit him with the mic and get it over with. Don't let him talk. Just hit him with the mic. That's what I would have booked. Just hit him with the mic and don't let him talk. Because that's when the segment went down to me, when he said we didn't want this. And I was like, oh, man, this is too smart for them. Nope, they let them talk. So it's just when I watch all this, you can see where the I call it a roller coaster, where they take you up high and then the drop isn't fun because, oh, it's them. Like with Jane saying, who's next and all this stuff, and then take Kanye come up and say, oh, my God, no, not this. Give it someone better. You see what I'm saying? So they get me high and they bring me down. So what you guys think about that? I'm done. Talk to you guys later.
Thanks, Boris. Appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Yeah, I mean, we kind of went over the Ty Conti stuff. So I don't know that we need to talk about that further. But Boris did bring up the House of Black, and they had a pretty big angle this week that we haven't got to yet. Buddy Matthews makes his AEW debut after their tag team match, and kind of teases at the beginning that he's there to renew the rivalry that he had with Aleister Black, and instead turns and just, you know, beats up Pac and beats up Penta. I thought it worked. I thought it was a good, decent angle. I'm surprised that I don't have the results in front of me right now, but I believe Black took the pin, correct?
He did.
Yeah, so that was a little confusing to me, especially, you know, as you know, I thought they were on a pretty hot trajectory to the top of the tag team division. But I liked the Matthews debut. I liked the way they did that. I think the tease was strange and kind of an example, maybe, Eric, of the insider stuff that we were talking about earlier. Like, if you don't know the story between those two guys, that is meaningless to you. That stare down is meaningless, and you're wondering, like, okay, who is this guy? So, you know, a little too cute there, perhaps. But in the end, I thought they got to a good place, and I like the idea of that stable being, you know, a trio of those guys. I think it has some legs.
I was too busy laughing at the way Alex Abrahantes looked with his new gimmick.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
It was hilarious. An unintentional comedy. I don't think I take him seriously. He was already out of his element as sort of the very peppy guy at ringside pounding the mat for them during matches. I didn't think he was necessary. I get that he's there to translate for Penta and Ray. But Brody King was not over with this crowd. It was dead silent when he was in on there. Black was over. And the crowd popped for Buddy Murphy because live crowds always pop for debuts and news and title changes. And
the lights went out. I mean, my goodness.
They went out twice. Once to bring him in, and then once to ECW all over again. So the you know, the crowd was chanting his name, right? And so you thought, was that because they were remembering the WWE feud that got dropped? Was that because they cheered Chavo Guerrero that first week when he came out as Andrade's manager? And it's like, wow, you're really an easy crowd. You know, he's the heel, but you know, that they're chanting his name. I'm curious going forward. Is Buddy the job guy for the team for that trio? I'm really looking forward to the Kenny Omega, Buddy Matthews match, because it's going to be the Spider-Man pointing meme. I mean, they're like the same guy in a ring, right? Like, Buddy Matthews has really copied, borrowed from Kenny Omega's playbook. And, he's like a younger, less broken down version of Kenny, but also, you know, has not achieved anywhere near what Kenny has. So I'm looking forward to that match. I guess, you know, I don't think he's really known for his charisma, right? He's known for being a good worker with an amazing look, right? Just a great, just jacked to the gills, a lot of muscle definition. And so it's good to stick him with Black, who can talk for Brody King and Buddy Matthews all day. You may not like what Black has to say. You may not get into his mystical mumbo jumbo, but he can certainly spew it with the best of them.
Were you surprised that he ate the pin?
I think it was 50-50 WWE booking, right? They ran that match back pretty quickly, I guess, to further the angle. Obviously, it's a makeshift team with Pac, and Pac is the singles guy, and Penta and his brother Phoenix are the tag team. But he's out you know, Ray's out injured right now. And so it seemed to me like they were just trading wins till they can get Phoenix back in a month from his elbow dislocation, and they can, you know, have some six-man matches that'll probably be pretty fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. Let's get to a couple emails here before we jump to the on-site correspondent who had to hop off real quick here. We will go to Chris. He goes, okay, they got me. I am now in the corner of MJF. I'm sure this is going to play out horribly for CM Punk, but they have me hook, line, and sinker. I have never even entertained the thought before, but after seeing that, I think MJF will one day be a hell of a babyface. What do you guys think? Yeah, Eric, you alluded to this a little bit at the top of the show, you know, kind of saying like, hey, maybe that's in the cards, not yet, because there's still work to be done as MJF as a heel. But, I mean, he kind of – it's hard to argue with Chris on that one in terms of giving a taste of what that could potentially look like. He was able to cultivate that sympathy and get real emotional out there.
I am just going to read Wade Keller's analysis on this one from his summary. So the correct policy is to never, ever believe MJF and to never, ever believe a heel who suddenly tells a sob story to gain sympathy. Another rule is not to book babyfaces to believe the heel when everyone watching knows it's a ploy and thus the babyface is being a sucker. That said, MJF's performance was so damn strong, his story so relatable, that I don't think people are faulting Punk for considering the possibility that MJF was serious. It just indicates that Punk's too good of a guy, willing to give MJF the benefit of the doubt. This also seemed like a glimpse into the unlikely top-level babyface promos MJF can deliver someday, way down the line after years of being a heel. I think Wade summed it up pretty well there.
Yeah. And that's why I say, like, you know, that there's a lot of heat there now. Like if MJF doesn't hit a home run the way that he did with that promo, I think it really, I don't know, Eric. I mean, I think it could have not derailed the momentum of the feud but kind of stalled things out. Like if he doesn't hit a home run there, you kind of do get into that place of like, oh, silly babyface is out there. Like obviously MJF doesn't mean it, right? So he had to deliver there in order to make this a viable chapter in this story. And the fact that he did speaks to, you know, his talent, number one, but also just that there's range there for him to tap into. And I think, you know, you're really starting to see that more and more now that he's going to be a fixture somewhere at the top for a long time. I think it was kind of a risky thing to do because, you know, if you don't do it well enough, it, you know, people can see right through that thing.
Yeah, and that's to emailer Chris who was hooked by it. That's going to make next week when MJF reveals it was all a ruse. It'll put all the much more heat on it, man. Because he was taking me somewhere and he pulled the rug out from under me. He's Lucy with the football to Charlie Brown yet again, and he'll laugh and he'll twirl his metaphorical evil mustache and laugh at all you marks who bought his sob story.
Yeah. We'll go to Zach in Texas. He goes, that was quite the show. The MJF promo was absolutely next level. The villain tells a compelling story about how the hero essentially created them, leaving the hero to reconcile with that reality and figure out how to still put the heel down. It's what WWE tried to do with Lita and Becky, but so much better. Jericho and Kingston also killed it on the mic. Jericho is very good when he's motivated, and Eddie just speaks from the heart. The barbs those two threw at each other. Wow. I'm just imagining the pop when Eddie pins Jericho at Revolution. Face of the Revolution might be the blackest ladder match ever, especially if Shane Strickland joins the fray. Sting will be competing in a Tornado six-man 3 weeks before he turns 63. Danielson and Garcia put on a technical wrestling clinic, and the show closed with Danielson and Moxley getting a This Is Awesome chant before Danielson even spoke a word. AEW is a wild place. So, you know, we tackled MJF pretty good. We tackled the Jericho Kingston stuff pretty good. But Let's pivot to Danielson and Moxley, because you had the big show closing angle. Danielson and Garcia have a good match. I wasn't as high on it as Zach is, but I thought it was good enough. And you know, when you have a match like that, you know kind of where things are going. You know Danielson's going to go over strong. I think sometimes it's hard to buy, you know, the drama that they try to cultivate. And I thought both those guys ran into that in that match. So, but still strong. But the story is Danielson versus versus Moxley. Eric, you know, what did you think of the match between him and Garcia, and what do you think of that match and how they got there tonight?
Unfortunately, it was all rushed because Jericho had a blah, 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 blah for forever, and Kingston had to add his 2 cents. So everything else got crunched for time as a result of that thing going long. And so I think it was 8:47 when they came out and locked up. So they had 13 minutes for a match and a post-match angle. You're putting Danielson, who's a big star, and Moxley, who's a big star, in the final segment. It's not really a main event match. It might be a main event match on Rampage. In fact, I think Daniel Garcia and Moxley was the main event of the second Rampage that was mostly that CM Punk debut at the United Center back in August. And so, you know, Garcia's not a guy you think he's going to win in any way. So maybe a grappling style mat wrestling match tends to need a little bit more time.
Right.
Even though some fans consider it boring, I like the style, especially when two really good wrestlers are doing it. And so they didn't have time, right? They had to rush through that match, and it probably would have been better with 5 more minutes. And on the other hand, do you want Garcia going 15 minutes with Danielson, right? Is that probably is not the how fans perceive the two. It makes Danielson look weaker, maybe. That's that. And the post-match promo was just rushed. It probably could have been better. I'm sure they had to scrunch that one down for time. And, it's instantly a match that I have a great interest in seeing. Even if they end up are they going to end up tag-teaming after this? Are they going to end up having a longer program where Danielson cheats to win or, you know, whatever? Great interest in seeing how that goes. Legitimately don't know who's going to win, so I'm fairly excited about it.
Yeah, I am too. I am too. And I think, yeah, tonight was rushed, for sure. They got to where they needed to go, and, you know, they still have another week to kind of put a bow on everything. I thought what I felt was weird about the ending and right before kind of the promo segment, or I guess, I don't know, the hype match segment, was it, you know, 2.0 beating up Danielson was an odd avenue to go down, because I just didn't know what the point of that was, really. I mean, can you get in the head of Tony Khan on that one?
Yeah, I mean, the point is Danielson dissed 2.0 earlier in the show by saying Daniel Garcia would be much better with him. He could teach him violence. He could improve him, you know, implying 2.0 are jabronis. We've seen this play out multiple times, right? Where 2.0, you know, 2.0 attacks Moxley, 2.0 attacks Punk, right? They're the cannon fodder, low level heels that can talk a bit, which is Daniel Garcia's weakness at this point in his young career. And it was, you know, it was, they were just sort of a bridge. They were bridge fodder to get, to give Moxley a reason to come out and save Danielson and set up the pay-per-view match.
Yeah, you're right. But I don't know. It just, like, do you think how do you foresee this thing going with Danielson and Moxley? Like, because, you know, everything that Danielson said in that promo of, like, wanting to team with Moxley and be on the same page and cultivate, you know, the right kind of wrestler for AEW, like, that had babyface undertones to me. Whether it was supposed to or not, I don't know, but it certainly did, just because, A, it was Danielson who was saying it, and B, the idea of Moxley and Danielson kind of creating all these other Moxley and Danielson-style guys in AEW, I think is something that's intriguing to look at and get behind and want to see. And then on top of it, you have kind of now Danielson positioning himself opposite, like, 2.0, who are straight heels. Like, do you think this becomes a reality? This little, maybe not a tag team in the truest sense, but, like, you know, a Moxley Danielson stable. Like, do you think that has legs and a possibility coming out of Revolution?
So I think that Danielson is a heel, right? He was a heel against Hangman Page. He's been heelish, cocky. And what he's saying is definitely a heel tactic. It's the core AEW approach is just too goofy. It's too loose. These guys, I think he was talking about Sammy Guevara. He was interviewed somewhere. Sammy Guevara's just on his blog and his vlog, and you know, not focused. So he's doing a less obnoxious Dan Lambert critique of AEW and saying we could make him so much better with our violence. And that's inherently a heel thing that he's doing. However, when we were in, was it in Chicago where he proposed the, at Wintrust, where he proposed that they team up together? I think so. I think I was there
for
that.
And it got a pop.
Yeah,
right.
Totally.
Yeah.
So even though the intention is almost, I don't want to call it like an invasion angle, like, hey, let's a couple of ex-WWE guys teaching the kids how to really do wrestling the right way is inherently would be on its face, theoretically, a heel angle. There's a big part of AEW's fan base that liked it, at least did in Chicago, right? And popped
yeah.
for it and wants to see it as a, and they would treat them as baby faces, not the heels that they're sort of rolling this out as. So how does the pay-per-view match go? I mean, so your options are Danielson cheats against Moxley to win, and they continue the feud, right? And mm-hmm. they don't team up, or they beat the hell out of each other. Moxley wins and then says, yeah, let's team up, let's do this. Or Moxley loses and says, let's, you know, whoever loses says, I respect the hell out of you, we bled together, and, you know, I respect you, let's do this team thing, right? I mean, those are sort of your two options.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I don't know. I think the idea of, like, the stable, that intrigues me. I don't know. For some reason, like Danielson and Moxley as a tag team wouldn't be bad, but particularly with Danielson, there's so much out there for him to do as a singles act. Where it's like, as fun as it would be with Moxley as a tag team, I want to see him out there doing other things as a singles wrestler, because who knows how many matches he has left, you know?
Yeah, I think some wrestling fans are disappointed that AEW is not the American version of New Japan Pro Wrestling. There is one way it is the American version of New Japan Pro Wrestling, and that is everybody is in a darn stable, right? Nobody's just floating around out there. Everybody joins, or it's like Stardom in that way too, right? Everybody's in a stable. I don't know. I'm willing to entertain whatever John Moxley and Danielson do, right? They're so
right.
good.
A couple other things before I get into like my final notes. Do you have anything else that you wanted to bring up tonight?
Hey, Keith Lee is back. He almost got to do a backstage promo, but they interrupted him right away. And Ricky Starks popped me by making fun of Keith Lee's really deep voice and serious demeanor.
Yes.
I mean, that was fantastic.
Yes.
It was very subtle. I mean, it lasted, 15 seconds. But it made me want to see Keith Lee grab Ricky Starks by his obnoxious throat and throttle him. We did have a Ricky Starks versus 10 match. 10 has now done jobs successively on Rampage and Dynamite in a row. And Starks winning, which was the right call, is good for the ladder match in that it puts a shorter, a smaller guy who can do some movement with all this beef in the ring, but it also means we're not getting an all beef ladder match at the pay-per-view. I don't know if I want to put Ricky Starks in his injured neck. Maybe he's recovered. Maybe he's full can go, but I'm not sure. I'd put Ricky Starks in the ladder match just because what you worry about is health. I do like the Cutler Cam segments mostly because, the relatively bland outside the ring Red Dragon just uses a different term for Cutler's first name. Tonight we got Braylon and Landon were
yep.
names. Landon might have been used before. I don't recall Braylon. I think that is most of my notes. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. I wanted to touch on the Face of the Revolution ladder match because, with Ricky Starks qualifying, I think another qualifier that they have is Orange Cassidy against Anthony Bowens, I believe.
Yeah.
Come up on Rampage. So I think, I don't know. To me, that screams Orange Cassidy, but I don't know.
Let's get the star power on the pay-per-view. Yeah, that's what a lot of the sort of late additions to the card scream. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, how do you think this match has been built so far? I mean, I conceptually, I think having the big guys in that match is an interesting concept. And I know that there's a bit of a movement on Twitter to kind of, hey, let's have an all big guy ladder match that I think sounds good in theory, but not in practice. And so I, like you, I think Ricky Starks is a smart ad provided he's healthy. But I'd like to see though, just, I don't know, some time spent with each of these guys talking about like the stakes of this match a little bit. Like, you know, Keith Lee almost got there, it seemed, but then he was cut off. I mean, you have Powerhouse Hobbs. Let's hear from him a little bit on this. Ricky Starks too, you know? And I think you wanna just, I mean, look, it's a ladder match. You know, you want that match to stand out in terms of, you know, it's big bumps, it's big spots, you have a title opportunity on the line. And so I think AEW can button up a little bit by giving some context behind, you know, the competitors that are going to be going on March 6th.
Yeah, part of the problem is they had the challenge here is they have to get six guys in the match. And I think in past iterations of this match, they I think they've often saved one or two spots for surprise debuts, like Brian Cage and All Ego Ethan Page jump to mind in past, I think, maybe debuted in these ladder matches. But this time they had, I mean, Orange and Bowens will be the fifth qualifying match, right? And so it's played out over a number of weeks on TV, so they don't even have everybody in the match yet. So that, you know, when you're still trying to get the guys in the match, there's not a lot of time. There's not going to be a lot of time left to do what you're suggesting, which is good. I suspect one thing AEW does, they've still got Rampage and then another Rampage and it'll be a live Rampage and from Orlando, and then they've got next Wednesday from Jacksonville to do what you said, and I hope they do it because they've done a good job developing backstories and shooting angles for all of these. You know, these nine matches they have for the majority of them. And I think this week, instead of doing a Road 2 show, they just had a control center with Shivani. I suspect the A-team, the AEW's A-team video production crew were busy working on the Revolution special, right? You could see them doing a lot of pre-tapes for that, you know, that pre-show they do, the preview show they usually run after Rampage or, you know, whenever they run that. And those things are always amazingly produced. They seem to come too late in the game. They repurposed some of the footage for the last week of TV. So maybe you'll get it with that. Yeah, Keith Lee, for sure. Let's hear his mission statement. Absolutely.
Him especially. And Hobbs, too. You know, I mean, like, I think you want to hear from both of them. But, yeah, Keith Lee especially, like, especially as the new face.
Yeah, give me the music with Ricky Stark sitting there being interviewed, being cocky and saying, you know, I hurt my neck. I was off TV for a while. And this is my chance to come back, right? Wardlow talking about how he's, you know, sort of contractually obligated under MJF to get this, win this match, and then he's got to hand the belt to MJF, right? It's which is how they started setting up this thing, right? That was the first word we heard of this ladder match, Face of the Revolution match, was between Wardlow and MJF bringing it up a couple months ago, maybe it was last month. And let's do that. Let's build everyone up. The pay-per-view certainly will not suffer from a lack of wrestlers booked on it.
Yeah, right. Exactly. All right, Eric. Well, we'll wrap up on this one final topic. We don't got to give it a lot of time, but I do want to just touch base on it because right before Dynamite, and I don't know if you caught this or not, but Tony Khan and Tony Schiavone recorded a video for Twitter where Tony Khan is teasing what he calls a massive announcement for pro wrestling that will be good for the fans and good for the wrestlers. Any idea, Eric, what he's referencing or talking about there? Did you see that video?
I have not seen the video, but I know I think Tony Khan, maybe in his Busted Open Radio or some appearance he did like last week, I think said, I've been in meetings, and then the Observer newsletter, Meltzer had a little bit more on it, where Tony Khan's been in a meeting, you know, all day meetings. He's trying to get a deal cemented. Nobody knows what it is. right? I don't think anybody's reported.
Nope.
I wouldn't begin to know where to guess. I wouldn't. It seems too early for it to be negotiating a new TV deal, right? Announcing an extension with Turner. I mean, I think AEW's chance of getting a big TV contract and a renewal is, you know, their best bet is to get somebody else to bid to drive up the price, like WWE did with its last TV deal. So I like feels like it's too early for that because there's still a couple years left on the contract. Could it be a streaming service of some sort? That was the other thing that popped to mind. Maybe like they've been shooting all this, all these dark matches. They've got all these episodes of the Dynamite. They've got, you know, maybe one or two house shows that we haven't seen, right? The House Wins It All or The House Always Wins or whatever it was called from
yeah.
last year. Is it some sort of AEW streaming deal or streaming service that they put together? Is it, you know, he's hyping it as such a big announcement that the fans will love. It doesn't, it strikes me as something bigger than just a talent signing, right?
Yeah, for sure.
What do you think?
I kind of thought the same thing. Like, I think it's bigger than it, or just not, I just don't get that it's going to be a talent signing. I think the verbiage around it in terms of, like, if you saw the video, he talks about legal teams being involved and not being able to say any details because of an NDA that he signed. So it seems more of an announcement on the business front than it is on the talent front. And yeah, I think a streaming service, that makes a lot of sense and would be good for the wrestlers, I suppose, good for the fans. So yeah, interesting little tease, and interesting that he went out of the way to tease it. I mean, it's not unlike him at this point, but it's
I think you know, the other thing that jumps to mind is maybe some sort of more fleshed out partnership with New Japan Pro Wrestling, like a super show
at
an outdoor stadium in the summer. I mean, that comes to mind as a thing it could possibly be. No idea if that's what it is. Tony Khan, as you point out, likes to do the big tease. He popped a big TV rating the other week by doing the tease. And Tony Khan also has somewhat of a mixed record in delivering when he really hypes things. I mean, he got burned badly on that Christian announcement last year. I mean, between that and the fireworks not going off at the end of the Revolution pay-per-view with the Omega Moxley match, it was a little bit of a stumble period for AEW, but they've obviously recovered and been super strong. You know, he had CM Punk hinted at it, big huge signing, delivered. Danielson and Adam Cole debuting back to back. And bringing in Minoru Suzuki all at that All Out pay-per-view show from last year that I was fortunate enough to be in the building for. So he's got more hits than misses, but when he misses, you know, there is the danger of being the boy who cried wolf, right? I'm sure Tony Khan is not, but he's a very intelligent man who doesn't make the same mistake twice. So I'm sure whatever it is probably a big deal.
Yeah. All right, so we'll wrap up our conversation there, but we do have our on-site correspondent just dialed in. So let's go over quickly here to Sergio. Sergio, are you there? Thanks for calling, my friend.
Hey, how's it going, guys? Yeah, I'm here. We just left the building. We're in our car heading out. You guys are over Bluetooth right now.
Oh, fantastic. Well, thanks for giving us some time. Glad we can get the kind of the in-person perspective for some things that happened tonight. But to start, Sergio, just give kind of an overall on the night. Like, was the crowd hot? Was the building full? What was the energy level? What type of crowd was it?
Well, I'm not sure if it came through on TV, but it was a pretty hot crowd. I got here like right as the AEW Dark Elevation tapings were starting. Like, we literally got here when the building was open, and the line to get in was pretty insane. And there was a ton of people. And once we sat down, even for Dark Elevation, there was quite a few people there, and the crowd felt pretty energetic. And then by the time Dynamite started, the arena was full. I mean, Western Bank Arena, it holds about 10,000 people. And besides a few scattered seats, it was all full, you know, a couple seats here and there. And there was one little area tarped off near the ramp. Well, I'm not sure if that had to be tarped off for, like, you know, entrance purposes and stuff like that. But there wasn't much tarped out by the hard camera. Everything around it was open. Everybody was energetic, and, you know, they were into the big stars, into the debuts, even into a few crowd favorites. And honestly, it was a really fun show. It was a really fun show. I enjoyed myself.
That's great. So about, I mean, over like 90% full or like near 100?
It was 95% to 100% full. It was, like I said, there was a little area tarped off over there by the entrance stage, but I'm not sure if, like, maybe fireworks were going to head that way or something like that. But, like,
sure,
besides that little area that was tarped off, it was all full. There was even a few seats behind the stage that were, like, you know, there was people in them. I'm not sure if those were more like studio hands and stuff like that, because it seemed kind of far away from the actual crowd. But it was definitely 90 to 95% full, besides a few scattered seats here and there.
Interesting.
Earlier today, WrestleTix reported that the building was set up for about 6,900 people, and they had about 950 tickets left. So they may have had a walk-up, right? So
yeah,
pretty close to full.
Yeah, interesting.
Go ahead. I'm sorry to step by you. There was quite a few people at the ticket booth. Like, when we were waiting in line, there was a decent line at the, like, box office ticket booth, whatever you want to call that, of walk-up people buying tickets. So I'm sure that filled a couple hundred of those 900 seats, because it was pretty full in there. It was pretty full, and it was pretty energetic. I'm sorry I interrupted you.
No. That's great insight. What kind of crowd was it? I mean, did you get the sense that it was more, you know, that, you know, the Men 1834 crowd? Was it a family affair? Like, talk a little bit about, like, the who of the population.
I would say it was probably 70% of that. 70% of that male 18 to 49. You know, like, a lot of dudes here just hanging out and whatever. But there was a good amount of families. You know, it wasn't all dudes. It was, you know, families here. I saw a lot of kids. Maybe I'm just jaded because around me there was quite a few kids, like, scattered around me when I walked in. And then at our seats, we had pretty good seats near the ring, and there was quite a few kids there. But, like, I would say it was mostly dominated by that male 18 to 49 demo that they're always chasing. So, but it was, you know, about 70% that, 30% families and, you know, women, I guess.
Okay. Cool. So who got the biggest crowd reaction tonight?
Let's see. The biggest crowd reactions, CM Punk, definitely, when his chants came up. I mean, I know he didn't really have an entrance in front of the crowd or anything like that, but, like, when he showed up, the CM Punk chants were really loud. The debuting buddy, I don't even know what his last name's going to be. I don't think it's Murphy. Buddy Matthews, I think.
Buddy
Matthews. He got a pretty loud pop when he appeared and got a loud buddy chant. Moxley, when Moxley came out, it was pretty deafening. I would say Moxley was probably, if I had to choose, I would say Moxley probably got the biggest reaction when his Wild Thing music played, followed by closely by Eddie Kingston. Like, when they got when that Eddie chant starts going, it picks up steam fast. And, of course, everybody loves singing along with, like, Jericho in the dark segment after the show ended. That was after Rampage. Adam Cole came out to address the fans, address his title match. And, of course, he got a loud – he was actually acting like a babyface to us, but, like, a loud babyface chant. And actually, Wardlow got a big, like – there was, like, a rumbling around us because Wardlow didn't come out with CM Punk earlier. And I know one of the guys I was there to see was Wardlow, and so was my cousin who was with me. And there was, like, a feeling that we weren't going to get Wardlow. But spoilers, I'm sorry, I don't want to spoil all of Rampage, but because I don't think his match was advertised. But Wardlow did show up in Rampage and got a pretty nice reception, I would say. I think it was just as much because people were surprised to see him, because everybody thought their chance had gone since MJF had a segment without him. But when he came out and spoilers, he did his powerbomb of Symphony to somebody during the Rampage. It got a pretty big reaction. I really think Wardlow is going to they got something special brewing with Wardlow, especially if they pull the trigger soon. But also the one that I really want to point out, and I think my cousin might have caught this one too. I don't know if it came through on TV, but during that 20-man battle royal, the tag team battle royal, I don't know how many teams were in there, but the tag team battle royal, I don't know if it came through, but Santana got like, there was a point there where Santana was by himself, and I forget who he was going up against. I want to say it was Dax of the Revival, but there was a really loud Santana chant going. And I know a few weeks ago, Santana cut a really nice, fiery babyface promo against Jericho. So I think they might have something in Santana there, too, because the crowd was really behind Santana and Ortiz in general, but especially Santana when he had his chance to shine in the Battle Royal.
Interesting. Very interesting. And, yeah, you could sense that a little bit. And he's, you know, been on a there is untapped potential there for sure. Eric, go ahead with a question for Sergio.
Yeah, I agree. Santana is – they've got something in Santana. I wish they'd push them as a tag team. They really have it outside the, you know, the first couple months they were in the promotion after they debuted at that All Out in 2019. So can we continue with the spoilers of Rampage, get some Rampage results for those who want to listen and those who don't maybe can cover their ears for a little bit?
Fast forward for a couple minutes, folks.
Orange Cassidy and Anthony Bowens. How was that one, and who won it?
Orange Cassidy and Anthony Bowens. It was a pretty good match, pretty good back and forth. The Acclaimed was definitely over. Orange, what's his name? Max Caster came out. He did his usual rap, and he did a line that got, I don't want to spoil it, but he made a line that really made everybody go, oh, in the crowd. And even Orange Cassidy actually got on the mic and feigned about to rap himself, and then he ended up just putting hands in his pocket, but he did give a couple yo-yos in his Orange Cassidy his Orange Cassidy slow voice, and then he did say word to your mother after you, like, punched him or something like that. But it was definitely a nice back-and-forth match that, again, spoilers, Orange Cassidy ended up winning after Danhausen appeared from, I think he was wearing a Ring Crew. I think he was wearing a Ring Crew outfit because Max Caster was interfering in the match throughout the whole match, basically. And they injured Wheeler Yuta because Wheeler Yuta had came out with Cassidy earlier when they did their entrances. And there was no Danhausen, which disappointed a bunch of people because I would say top three T-shirts, I didn't bring this up before, but top three T-shirts there were definitely Danhausen had a ton of T-shirts there. I would say Moxley had a ton of T-shirts there. And probably Adam Cole. I would say those were the top three T-shirts I saw. So, like, there was a lot of people there to see Danhausen, and it seemed like they were about to be disappointed, but he did come out right at the end. And after Orange Cassidy did win his match, they did a pose, like, did the thumbs up, put the glasses on, sent the crowd home happy before Tony Khan came out for the final dark segment.
If you are Torch readers, if you're interested in hearing about who Danhausen is and what his motivations are, around 8 minutes and 45 seconds into this week's Control Center with Tony Schiavone on their YouTube page, Danhausen does do a little bit of explanation of that for about a minute about why he's there and what he might do. How did Sammy and Andrade take place?
Yeah, Sammy, because Orange Cassidy versus that was actually the main event of Rampage. Well, I don't know if they shoot it out of order or not and, you know, how it goes. But for us, Sammy and Andrade led off Rampage, and Orange Cassidy was the main event. But that was a pretty good back-and-forth match. The crowd seemed dead at some points. They did get up a little bit for Sammy. I don't know. I feel like Sammy's kind of, I don't know if it's just my bias seeping through, but Sammy Guevara has just been super ice cold for me as a babyface. There's just, like, a huge nothing burger there ever since he, like, turned. And I'm just waiting for him to catch something, and it just hasn't been there. And it kind of shows on the crowd. They'll pop for his music. They'll pop for, like, oh, Sammy Guevara a little bit. But and then, like, once the match gets going, it kind of settles down a lot. Like, the whisper in the crowd just kind of goes dead. And Andrade, I feel like, is victim of that too. Andrade hasn't done much except hang out with the Hardy family office or whatever they're called. So the match, it was a good match and probably a contention for best of the night. But for me and for, it seemed like for a lot of the crowd, there just wasn't much investment there. And I know during Dynamite, they announced that Matt Hardy, Isaiah Cassidy, and Andrade would face Sammy Guevara, Sting, and Darby Allin at the pay-per-view. I saw that they announced that during Dynamite, I'm pretty sure. And so everybody was just waiting for the match to be over and the Hardy family to jump Sammy, because everybody wanted to see Sting and Darby. And when Sting and Darby finally came out, like the crowd felt way more energetic when Sting and Darby came out than when it was just Darby and Andrade fighting, to be honest with you. It's kind of a shame because they're both really talented, but there's not much.
Did Sammy retain?
Oh, I'm sorry about that. Yeah, Sammy did retain. He retained with a springboard stunner, like a much more athletic version of like a springboard stunner than like Cody or John Cena would do, obviously. But it was a very nice athletic springboard stunner that I don't think I've seen him do. But he did retain against Andrade in like a pretty good back and forth, maybe 15-minute match, and he did retain his title. And he still comes out with both titles. He's still wearing, I guess as the TNT Undisputed Champion, he is still wearing both titles, which I think is a bit overkill, but whatever.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
How was the contract signing between DMD, Britt Baker, and Thunder Rosa? Predictable? Like they attacked each other or whatever?
It was pretty predictable, you know. Thunder Rosa, they were hot for both of them, really. Like, Thunder Rosa and Britt Baker both got their pops. Of course, everybody likes to do the DMD with Britt Baker, and they pop when she hugs Tony and so forth. But, you know, everybody was waiting for the contract to be signed and somebody to go through the table. And, you know, that's what they did after. I think Britt's promo was a little stronger than Thunder Rosa, but Thunder Rosa was a lot more fiery. And I am excited for the match. And really, they just brought up what you would think they brought up, like their lights-out match, and Britt Baker said she became the star, even though Thunder Rosa did win that match. And nobody cares about Thunder Rosa unless it's in a sentence with Britt Baker's name in it. And then they kind of started brawling afterwards, and they were jumping Thunder Rosa, and then Mercedes Martinez came out and made a save, and eventually Mercedes and Thunder Rosa ended up putting Jamie Hayter through the table to end the segment, which was nice because Mercedes Martinez, she's from Waterbury, Connecticut, which is about 30 minutes from where the show was this week, and that's where I live. So it was nice to see somebody from Waterbury, Connecticut come out, and she didn't get as big a pop as I would like, but at least for me, it was a pretty good moment, and they did put Jamie through the table to end that segment.
And did you stick around after? Did Tony Khan come out and thank the crowd? If so, who did he bring out to be his special guest?
Yeah, I'll just finish up the Rampage real quick. Rampage was Wardlow. He had a match against Nick Camarado, that big guy from the factory. And he did sell, like, Wardlow. So I think this is the most I ever seen Wardlow sell in a match before. Like, Nick Camarado's a big guy, and it really comes through when you're standing there, and he even dwarfed Wardlow a little bit in the bulk, and Wardlow was selling, like, you know, he was selling. There was a little bit of that Goldberg shake your head selling that I know Wade's not the hugest fan of, but there was definitely more selling in this match. But it did end up after about six, seven minutes of mostly Nick Camarado offense, Wardlow did get in his Symphony of Power Bombs, and the crowd was popping huge for the Symphony of Power Bombs. And then the crowd was begging for Wardlow to turn on Shawn Spears at the end. Like, I hope they're not waiting too long to have Wardlow to finally turn on those guys, because, like, my section was literally begging Wardlow, like, please, like, powerbomb Shawn Spears into the center of the earth. And he didn't end up doing it. He didn't end up doing it, but it was very over. And there was a hook segment where QT Marshall came out, and he kind of ran down Taz and said that Taz raised Hook wrong, and when he was in the factory, he taught him respect and all this other stuff. And Hook ended up coming out, obviously, eventually. He didn't get his hands on QT Marshall because a bunch of people from the factory came out, and Hook just kind of threw him around for a couple seconds, and then QT backed up, and then Hook just kind of left without saying much. So that was it for Rampage, but Rampage was pretty good, too. And then
how was Hook's reaction?
Yeah, I was going to ask.
Hook's reaction, honestly, was good. It was good. But, like, the reactions I see Hook get everywhere, I was expecting more. I mean, I'm a Hook fan. I really bought into the Hook hype. And when it was obvious that QT Marshall was coming out and running down Taz and calling him a bad dad and all that kind of stuff, like, I really thought the fans were going to get into more of a Hook chant or something like that. His music did play, and his music plays really, really loud. And people were popping for it when he came out, and he did his few things. So he got a decent reaction, but I wouldn't put him in the top five reactions of the night. And it was just a little bit less than I thought, but people were happy to see him. People were happy to see us.
Yeah, so let me jump into here as we pivot back to Dynamite. Like, the talk about the MJF promo and what the vibe was in the building for that, as he, you know, obviously kind of tried to milk his past for some sympathy, and you had Punk out there, you know, selling that angle. What was the reaction in the building to that MJF promo? We've been spending a lot of the night talking about it with callers.
Well, the reaction was really, because when MJF's music plays, there's a pop because everybody's so excited to see him. But then it's almost like, oh yeah, we have to boo. So that quick pop automatically quickly turns into a boo, kind of similar to what Roman Reigns used to get, but for a completely different reason, because MJF is a heel and he's supposed to be getting booed. But you can feel an excitement when MJF is coming out. And he came out, and he was very somber. And like you said, he gave a very somber and real babyface promo that kind of caught me off guard a little bit. And like when he, in the building, definitely when he was, he had his few supporters scattered throughout the building, but when he started talking, there was definitely more boos than anything. A shut the F up chant started and all that other stuff. People really popped when he was talking about like being a little Jew and all this other kind of stuff. But I don't know, it really felt, it was a weird promo because MJF is this big heel, and he's always looking to get the heat and everything like that. But I feel like he wasn't going for heat in that promo. It felt like he was going for sympathy. And honestly, by the end of the promo, I felt like he was getting it. Like, all those fans that were kind of excited to see MJF, like, a good portion of them did just start kind of, you know, they were cheering for him. And by the time he walked up to the ramp by the end of that segment, there was a decent size part of the crowd that was chanting MJF, MJF. So I don't know if it was supposed to come off that way or how MJF trying to play the baby face, trying to turn the crowd, and it kind of worked by the end of it, to be honest with you. It kind of worked on our crowd.
No, that's interesting because that, yeah, I mean, they definitely were going for that. I mean, were you able to tell? Because a big part of that promo was Punk's reaction to it, which, depending on where you're sitting in the arena, like, you probably couldn't tell, like, what he was trying to get over with what he was saying to MJF because it was off mic. Like, were you able to get any sense of that, or were you kind of just, you have to watch it back on TV to really figure out what that was all about?
I'm going to be honest with you. When Punk came out, everybody was happy and started chanting CM Punk, and everybody was kind of jumping up and excited. So it was kind of hard to see what he was trying to convey. So honestly, we were six rows back. Like, I counted our rows. We were six rows back from the ring. And so I had a pretty good view, and I'm a tall guy. I'm 6'7", so I could see over everybody. And I just couldn't because of the noise of the crowd and Punk's back was kind of turned to me after he got into the ring, I didn't really see at all what he was trying to convey to MJF, because he just kind of came out and, like you said, he was more, he talked off mic. He never got on the mic or anything like that. And then the CM Punk chants were loud, so it was kind of hard to tell what he was trying to do there, what he was trying to accomplish there, especially after such a promo from MJF when he was reaching for sympathy, it felt like. I want to say the crowd didn't know how to react to CM Punk, but that's not true, because as soon as he came out, there was a loud CM Punk chant, and I would say he got the third biggest pop of the night, and maybe he would have gotten the top pop of the night if they didn't do that promo with MJF, where it kind of muddied the waters a little bit, to be honest with you. Muddied the waters.
Yeah, I think when you watch it back on TV, it'll fit better, because you'll be able to see Punk's reaction. But I think based on Sergio's feedback, it sounds like, you know, that promo got over like MJF wanted it to. I mean, I think it was right on the money.
Yeah, I think it'll all be resolved next week when it turns out to be a swerve. Otherwise, the thing makes no sense. I mean, we've still got, one way you could book that pay-per-view match is Punk gets his win back against MJF to blow off the feud. Wardlow wins that ladder match and gets the TNT title shot and wins, and then has to hand, by contract, storyline contract, he has to hand that belt over to MJF, and then you've got MJF and Wardlow at the May Double or Nothing show, right? If you were going to delay MJF's world title shot until later in the year, you could go that way. That'd be a way to go.
Yeah. Last question for me, and then Eric, I'll throw to you one last time too. We've been debating kind of whether or not Jericho and Kingston, the promo segment between them, was successful, or whether it worked or not. How did the audience react to that in the building in real time?
From where I was sitting, yeah, they ate it up. Like, you know, Eddie Kingston is super over with the crowd. Everybody loves chanting Eddie. Jericho obviously has the song that people love to sing along to. I mean, the promo, they got a couple, like, WWE, you know, digs in there. And, you know, the crowd was oohing and aahing every time it was mentioned and stuff. So in the building, it got over pretty good, I would say, because, like, people were definitely – it was definitely more 70-30, I would say, behind Eddie Kingston. Like, once the promo got rolling, because Eddie Kingston is such a personality and he draws you in. And Jericho, I felt like, was kind of trying to play heel there. Not even trying, kind of. I think he was playing heel there. But the promo definitely got over in the building, because, you know, when you're in the building, everybody loves chanting Eddie. Everybody loves to ooh and ah at the WWE shots. So I'm not sure how it came off on TV, but in the building, it definitely, people were behind it, it felt like.
In the building, did Jericho get booed at all?
I wouldn't say he, from where I was sitting, I wouldn't say booed, but it was all Eddie Kingston. Like, all anybody wanted to chant was Eddie Kingston, besides when Jericho came out and his music played. And there was a couple oohs and ahs from lines Jericho did, and maybe a few scattered boos, because there was no boos for Eddie Kingston, but there was definitely, even though apparently in storyline he doesn't know what a babyface is, Eddie Kingston was definitely the babyface in that scenario there, and the crowd was definitely more behind Eddie Kingston than Jericho.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting, because I agree with you. I think Jericho was playing the heel tonight, pretty obviously, and it's just going to be really hard to get people to boo Jericho at this point, because he's sort of, you know, he's one of AEW's founders and was the first champion, and he's in that Ric Flair legend, wants to play heel. Jericho's probably a better heel than a face, but he's a legend. It's really hard to get people to boo Jericho, even when he's acting heelish these days. Good to hear that the crowd was chanting for Kingston.
Yeah.
I feel like if you want to fully turn Jericho heel, you have to get rid of the song, because As long as he comes out with a song, the fans are going to cheer and they're going to pop and they're going to want to sing along with it. If he wants to go heel, maybe one of the things he can do is, like, the song could start playing and then he cuts it off and say, no, you guys can't sing to the song. You guys were chanting for Eddie Kingston, not for me. You guys don't have permission to sing to the song. And maybe that could turn Jericho heel long enough, because I really feel like the AEW crowd, especially more over than, like, the WWE crowd, is willing to play along a little bit. That goes back to that MJF thing where when his music plays, everybody pops big, but then automatically goes right to booing him because they know that's what they're supposed to do. He's the heel, and he's trying to go for heel heat. So Jericho, I think as long as he has that song, it's going to be hard for him because people are excited to come and sing and dance and be on camera, and he points at them and they sing. So maybe he can use the song to go fully heel and be like, no, you guys can't sing this song anymore. You don't deserve it. That would be an idea, I guess.
Yeah,
I think they might have his band might have a new album coming out this year, so he might want to switch songs anyway. I can't remember if we've covered this. After Rampage finished up, did Tony Khan come out? What did he say? Who did he bring out?
Yes. Tony Khan did come out while Danhausen and Orange Cassidy were still in the ring celebrating Orange Cassidy's win. He kind of he talked them up a little bit, Orange Cassidy, and he I love when Tony Khan, he's like so enthusiastic and it feels so real and genuine. So like when he's really getting behind somebody, he says their name and his voice cracks a little bit and he sounds like such a dork, but it's really like a lovable dork. And he's like really, really into it. And he came out twice, I think, during the whole show. He came out right before Dynamite started. Oh, three times. Right before Dynamite started, right before Rampage started, and right after right after Rampage finished. And he kind of, Danhausen, Willie Yuta, and Orange Cassidy exited stage right. And Tony Khan, he was thanking the crowd. He was very enthusiastic. He said he hasn't been in Connecticut in a long time, and AEW's first show, and he thanked everybody for being so fired up and everything like that. And he said, I do want to bring out one last guy because you saw him quickly, but you didn't get a chance to see him that long. And he said, I'm going to bring out Adam Cole, which the crowd loved because, you know, one of the things you want to do when you go to an AEW show is sing along to Adam Cole, do the Adam Cole baby, do the boom. So he introduces Adam Cole. Adam Cole comes out. He does his whole entrance, the boom, the Adam Cole baby. Then he gets on a mic and he says, story time with Adam Cole. And the crowd was totally into him. I'm going to be honest with you. It was a babyface promo. He did not attack the crowd at all. He did not heel on the crowd. He mentioned his hangman, you know, the basis of his promo was that he needs to be champion and he's been champion everywhere he's been and that he's going to be the man to take AEW to new heights. But he did not throw dirt on Adam Page's name at all. He said Adam Page is a great wrestler. He's a great friend. I've seen him grow up, and he's a great champion. But he's not the champion that AEW needs. And he said AEW needs Adam Cole as the champion to go to the next level. And the crowd was totally behind him. I mean, earlier in the day, I know I didn't mention it, but they were pretty behind Adam Page. He probably got a top five pop when he came out to make the save earlier in the show, and he did his whole promo. But Adam Cole at the end, total babyface promo, total putting over Adam Page, putting over the city, putting over himself and how he has to be the next champion. And then he ended it with, he said, next time you see me in this building, I'm going to be the AEW champion. And he said, maybe I should get one more Adam Cole, baby, for good luck. And everybody popped for him, and he said, okay, let's do it. And he did the Adam Cole baby one more time. And honestly, that might be in the top three of the loudest reactions of the night. The second time he did the Adam Cole Bebe, and then Tony Khan gets on the mic and he says, you know, he thanks us all one more time. And he tells Adam Cole, he said, you're the last wrestler out here, so you're contractually obligated to walk around the ring and slap hands and take pictures and stuff. And Adam Cole kind of rolled his eyes a little bit, but he did smile and say, okay. And he went, and that's how the show ended. Like, the show ended with Tony Khan thanking everybody, a complete Adam Cole babyface promo, a thunderous Adam Cole baby by the crowd, and then followed by Adam Cole coming out to shake hands and take pictures around ringside. So it was kind of a...
Wow.
If Adam Cole was trying to be the heel, he wasn't the heel tonight in Bridgeport, that's for sure. And he wasn't trying
to. Yeah, I think that's
an
off the camp. You know, the cameras aren't rolling thing. I think it's to, you know, pop the crowd and send him home happy, a feel-good thing. They usually do faces with that. They don't do heels. That's interesting. That's a really interesting detail, Sergio. Yeah,
interesting.
I think they did Adam Cole last because we didn't get the Adam Cole entrance. Like, we got everybody else's entrance. You know, we got the Moxley, we got the Jericho, we got all these sing-along entrances. We didn't get – we even got Hook. We didn't get the Adam Cole entrance, so I think that's why he brought him out last, so the crowd can, you know, get that. Oh, and the crowd stuck around. I would say of the crowd that was there, maybe 10% left during Rampage, maybe. But even Tony Khan said on the mic, he was like, oh, wow, I'm so happy that all you guys stuck around, so many of you guys stuck around for an awesome Rampage and putting over the crowd and putting over everything. So it was definitely a fun experience, great show. The last time I went to a show was when NXT 25, TakeOver 25, was in Bridgeport. They had like a last second change, and they had to bring NXT TakeOver to Bridgeport. And that's the show Adam Cole did win the NXT World Championship from Johnny Gargano in that match, from what I remember. So it was kind of cool because at that time, Adam Cole was completely over and Gargano was kind of floundering with the fans. So it was kind of cool. That show ended all those years back. My last show ended with Adam Cole, and this show ended with Adam Cole completely over with the fans in two different companies, going for the winning the world title on one show and going for the world title on the other show.
Wow, very interesting, Sergio. Thank you so much for a great report. Really appreciate it. Any final notes on the night that you want to get to that you haven't already? You're pretty efficient, though.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we got to everything that I wanted to get to. There was other people that got good pops, of course. But no, I just, you know, one thing I want to say, it was a great show. I loved it. I had a ton of fun. There was a ton of energy. It's a different energy. WWE comes to Connecticut all the time. They come within 30 minutes from where I live in from Hartford, I live 30 minutes away. From Bridgeport, I live 30 minutes away. Even Mohegan Sun is a nice little drive, but I just haven't been tempted to go to a WWE show. I'm kind of out on WWE for now. I still keep up through the Torch and the podcast, but, like, when they come, I have no motivation to go. But as soon as we heard AEW was coming, we were pumped. We were ready. Me and my cousin, he got tickets. We got great tickets. The crowd was great. Everybody was pumped to be there. There was no WWE talk. There was nobody talking about stuff going on in WWE. It was a fan base there that was completely engulfed in the AEW product, happy to be there, happy to be a part of it. And I know I was happy to be a part of it 100%. And that's about it. And also I want to tell people, you know, I'm an avid Pro Wrestling Torch fan. I love Wade Keller, all the podcasts. I'm VIP. Go VIP. Listen to you guys. You guys do a great job whenever Wade can't host, and I can't say enough about how great AEW is, and I can't say enough about how great going VIP is. So that's all I got to say for tonight, guys.
Thanks a bunch, Sergio. Really appreciate your time. Glad you had a good time, and you know, get home safe tonight, man.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate you guys having me.
Talk to you soon. Thank you. All right, well, man, great. Just a great report from Sergio there, Eric, and we'll put a bow on things right there. Thanks to the callers, thanks to the emailers, very much appreciate everybody's contribution. Eric, always a blast talking wrestling with you, man. And you've been doing it for the Torch for a long time. Talk about how readers can find your stuff in the archives as VIP members.
You can type my name in, E-R-I-C-K-R-O-L. My stuff from 1990 probably is really bad, like not great, because I was, 19 years old at the time. And I've done a couple other things more recently, reports from Chicago tapings of AEW and a column on Hangman Page and some analysis of Sammy Guevara's first run as TNT champion.
Awesome. Very, very good. Yeah. PWTorch.com/GoVIP to check that out, to check the podcast out, to check Wade out. He'll be on the Wade Keller Hotline later talking about this very show, so you can catch him over there. I'm PW Torch Assistant Editor Zach Haydorn, and you can go VIP, check out my weekly audio show called On the Canvas, breaks down, the art of wrestling. We take a current event every single week and just talk about the art within it. Last week's show was a deep dive into the CM Punk promo that he cut last week in challenging MJF to the dog collar match. A good follow-up topic for this week will be that MJF promo from tonight. But we keep it all kind of – we leave booking at the door and the stories at the door and just kind of hone in on the art of that current event. So you can check that out as a VIP member. It's on the canvas, and it drops usually Thursday or Friday every single week. And then also, make sure you're heading to pwtorch.com. We've got news updates regularly, editorials, all the show reports you need, a rundown of all the podcasts that go up, even the free ones and the VIP ones, so you can keep track of those. My receipt columns are there regularly. I have some editorials coming up as well. So a lot there from a great team of contributors. So make that part of your daily wrestling fix on a regular basis. You can follow me on Twitter at ZHeydornTorch. That's at ZHeydornTorch. Torch, and you can follow the Torch on Twitter at PW Torch. That's at PW Torch. Eric, where can people hear more from you on social media these days?
So I do have a wrestling Twitter. I think my current it's Pro Wrestling VI1. I always have some Kota Ibushi is my avatar, and I've always got something. I just updated. Very happy Ibushi is back. That's my Twitter. It changes depending on Kota Ibushi's current state of affairs, but it's always something about Ibushi.
Fantastic. Well, Eric, you're a good follow on Twitter, so everybody give Eric a follow. But once again, thanks everybody for listening. Thanks everybody for emailing and calling. For Eric, I'm Zach, and we will catch you guys next time.